Good afternoon. I'm Tyler Danberg. Major League Baseball's trade deadline day is in full effect, and two teams are especially active with today's 6 p.m. deadline looming. Per reports, the Phillies acquired three-time batting champ Luis Arraez from the Giants and reliever Brooks Raley from the Mets. A day after sending starting pitcher Kevin Gausman to the Cubs, the Blue Jays landed starter Jose Soriano from the Angels for three prospects. Reds and Guardians are among the 14 teams off on deadline day. Soccer, Mauricio Pochettino will remain manager of the U.S. men's national team, signing a new deal through the 2030 World Cup. And in college hoops, Ohio State wraps up its Puerto Rico trip today at 1:30 against Equipo 2. Buckeyes won Sunday's exhibition 115-75. This update sponsored by Ramos Roofing. Request your free roof or exterior assessment today at RamosRoofingOhio.com. Ramos Roofing, reliable, local, built right.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
All right, back at it. Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes, and the Loose Cannon Boys. Gets going this week. How you feeling?
Come on, get the energy up, baby. Let's go.
My energy's up.
Let's go, baby. Listen, it's good to be back in the building with you. TLC, TD on the board. Back to doing our thing, man. Life is good. How you feeling?
Not bad.
You fired up about the Hall of Fame game on Friday? You on the sidelines?
Thursday.
Okay, Thursday night is the Hall of Fame game.
Thursday?
For the folks that don't know, what teams are participating
in this thing? Tell the folks who's playing up there in that little stadium. I'm going to double check, but I think it's Arizona and Carolina.
Okay. So could we be looking at a lot of Carson Beck reps? Does that do anything for you?
Listen, I've been up there for a time, you know, when Aaron Rodgers was with the Jets and he was in street clothes on the sideline. I can't even remember. Stroud didn't play last year, right?
No, we rarely get anything from players that we're going to be watching a lot of on Thursdays, Sundays, and Mondays.
They tried to make the Hall of Fame game two teams that at least have some dudes going in to the Hall that year. So with Larry Fitz going in and Kuechly going in, it makes sense. You could have had the Saints there because Breeze is going in this year, and that would be fairly big.
I don't know if anyone would know this off the top of their heads, but Luke Kuechly, knee-jerk reaction is he has to be one of the youngest people to be inducted in the Hall of Fame because of when he retired.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like when he gives his speech.
And to be able to get in.
I have to imagine he has to be among the youngest Hall of Fame entrants ever. Is he even 40 yet?
All right. So, no, he's not. He's mid-30s. But I would tell you that. All right. So, here's my guess. And I don't know this for a fact. I'm going to guess, so you have to have an injury-shortened season, injury-shortened career, right? I'm not looking this up. An injury-shortened career and someone that was that good in such a small time.
Which he no doubt was.
And the only person that comes to my mind is maybe my dad's favorite player. I'd have to go back that far. Gale Sayers.
When he was...
Oh, is it really? Six seasons?
Hey.
How many seasons with the Bears?
I don't know, but he got inducted at 34 years old. Luke Kuechly's going to be the second youngest at 35.
We're not even 4 minutes into the show, and we're already playing your theme music.
Good night, everybody.
That's how you start a week, AR. That's how you start a week. Good stuff right there. But, yes, Cincinnati St. X's own, Luke Kuechly, 35 years old.
Wow.
In his career, he packed in 7 Pro Bowls, 5 first team all pros, 2013 defensive player of the year. And so, I mean, my goodness, imagine telling someone when they started playing football, I don't know, let's call it your freshman year in high school. You started to take football really serious that 20, 21 years later, you're going to be an NFL Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Let me ask
Good for him.
Who else could have done this? The name that comes to my mind is Andrew Luck, but to get into Hall of Fame as a quarterback, you had to have won the big one, probably, if you're playing that.
Yeah. If Mahomes walked away right now, he's in.
How old is he?
It's a great question.
So he'd have to be gone for five.
Mahomes right now.
So he would.
I want to say
not that he's walking away.
30.
All right. So,
he'd be right there.
But he wouldn't get it. First ballot, he wouldn't get in. I mean, he would get in, but he wouldn't be the youngest.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he'd be.
Luck walked away at 28, maybe? What? When did he walk away, Maddie?
I can't remember 29? The exact age, but that sounds about right.
So about to be 29. So technically 28.
Yeah. All right. Okay. To your point, so, it's so rare that you would be young enough to go in and have a career that was worthy of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And I believe I saw a report last week that he is going to be the number one NFL game analyst for Netflix. Luke Kuechly. I think with Eagles Son. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever games Netflix has, I think Kuechly is going to be that guy. And so he walked away from the game, and now he's carving out a nice little path off the field. So good for him. Going in the Hall of Fame at 35.
I mean, Andrew Luck, I just looked this up. Andrew Luck led the league in touchdowns and was a four-time Pro Bowler. Comeback Player of the Year as well.
How many All-Pros did he rack up?
I don't think any.
Okay.
I don't know. No, he wouldn't get in.
It'd be close.
Just not enough. I think he needed yards and touchdowns. Like, he'd have the seasons.
He probably would have needed an MVP or two in there with, I think, an All-Pro or two first-team type of performance.
Most passing yards ever in a rookie season, he's got that.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's still the record of 43-74. But he would be the guy. Like, that would have been it. But if he would have had to make a run to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or to your point, he would have had to have been the MVP in order to make it.
Lamar retired right now, is he in? 29.
Yeah, I think so.
Two-time MVP.
Yeah.
Played in an AFC title game. I think it's the MVPs that would do it. That would get him in. Josh Allen?
The MVPs, we talked about this. The MVPs is the one thing that can stiff arm the never played in the big one.
Yeah, I was the best player in the league twice.
But I never played in the ultimate game. But it is a team game.
Yeah.
But it's rare to be a Hall of Famer at that position, never having actually played in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we got a lot for you today. We'll have some Buckeye talk here in this hour. Jimmy Haslam has got in front of a microphone. We'll see what he had to say. We'll do Party Like a Rothstar this hour. Adam King will saunter in at 1:30, and we'll get into the big trades and MLB deadline and all that. There is one thing.
Real quick, though, before you start. Another item on the menu today, 1 o'clock. The floor is yours. Your chance to win a Skyline Chili gift card. So 614-821-9710. TLC is going to open up the hotlines. You guys can call and talk about whatever you want. So we love hearing from you guys. Get in line. Again, 1 o'clock, 614-821-9710. The flow is yours.
So I heard the boys talking about this briefly, and I don't understand. I want to make sure that this is accurate. So in the Guardians game against Arizona, Gavin had a perfect game going, and Arizona tried to bunt their way on somewhere in the middle of the game to try to jumpstart something. And there's this, I think, a stupid unwritten rule whether a team that's being held hitless should attempt to get their first hit with a bunt. Like, is this really a debate? Like, if your team can't get on base, your strategy should be, how do we get on? Like, if he's too good today, how do we start something?
Yeah.
And it's either taking a lot of pitches or being over-aggressive or door number three, try to bunt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you're telling me that the bench is cleared because the Guardians were upset that Arizona tried to bunt their way on during a perfect game?
I did see that, and I saw that the crew trying to get the tarp on is the only reason why the grounds crew is the only reason why the team separated, because they had to get the tarp on. The video is hilarious. It is one of those odd, unwritten rules in the sport that I don't love.
So if you can't hit them, you're not allowed to bunt. That's the rule?
You're allowed to bunt in my mind. You are. The guy's so dumb. We got to do something to stop him. something. He's just mowing us down, which Gavin Williams has been doing to almost everybody recently. But yeah, I'm not with the Guardians on this one. I'm not. Sorry. It doesn't scream gimmicky to me. If it was
part of the game,
if it was gimmicky, then I'd be like, I don't love it. But yeah, like you just said, it's well within the rules to do at any point in time. Doesn't matter if you're up 10, down 10, you're allowed to try to bunt and get on base whenever you want. Of course, here where we're doing this radio show in Ohio, there's a lot of Guardian fans listening that didn't love that, which I understand. But if the roles were reversed, I don't think Guardian fans are going to be looking at Stephen Vogt and saying, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that.
Of course they
would. I think they would give their manager credit for being creative to try to slow down the momentum of the opposing pitcher.
Do anything. Anything you
Something.
Can. Right?
Yes.
I mean, it's almost the ultimate compliment. We can't hit you.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to bunt our way on.
Correct.
Or we're going to catch, or if the infield's playing a little back, or we're going to surprise you, or we have a speedy guy at the plate.
Yeah.
Like anything.
Yeah. I'm good with it.
Yeah. And by the way, he wound up breaking it up anyway with a single.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't even matter. Right. So somebody must have said something to somebody, and then it sparked it.
What was the boy's stance on Bishop and friends? I'm assuming that's who you're talking about.
I think their stance generally was, why would Arizona be thinking about a perfect game in the sixth or something like that? My whole point was, you're now hitless through five or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
You've gone through more than half the game, and it's a perfect game. Like, there's nothing. He's on one today.
And
are you not trying to win anymore?
And everybody in their dugout, Arizona's dugout, it's one of those things where it doesn't even have to be said. You can feel it. You can see it up there on the scoreboard. Yeah, this dude's throwing a no-hitter. This dude's throwing a perfect game. We got to do something to throw up a crooked number on this scoreboard because there's nothing but zeros on our side. Let's try to get something in order here. And I think that was a game plan for the D-backs. And I'm okay with it.
One of baseball's unwritten rules, don't bunt to break up a no-hitter. At what level? Honestly, only the pros everywhere? Let me read you a couple more of these, see if you guys agree with these. Don't step on the pitcher's mound when you are running out to take the field. Okay. So if you're going to right field or left field.
Stay off the mound.
Yeah. Don't step on the lines when you're taking the field or leaving it. That's superstition.
It's like an individual thing.
Yeah, that's an individual thing. Don't steal or swing at a 3-0 if you are up by more than X number of runs.
That's fair.
I think it's to each his own. I think it's.
I don't think we need to be stealing extra 90s when we're up 12. You know, let's just stay. Let's stationary baseball.
A lot of people
say
stay aggressive. You never know. We've seen innings where guys have put up eight runs.
You're usually more the sportsmanship guy than I am.
Don't admire a home run that you hit or strut around the bases.
No. We're pimping these all day. If you get a no doubter, I don't care if it takes you 45 seconds to get to first base. Enjoy it. That's how I feel. As pitchers get to dominate, pimp them.
I love that one.
Why? Why don't you love that? Explain to me why you don't love
that. You
don't
have to just admire it. Go ahead. You get a free trot around the bases. Take advantage of it.
Ooh.
Don't speak to a pitcher who's in the middle of a no-hitter. 100%. Or at least, you can speak to him, but don't even hint about the
game. Absolutely
not. It's got to be anything but the game. Because if you don't speak to him and he's on the end of the bench, then you're drawing even more attention. All right, there are many others, but the guards were pissed at the D-backs after they tried to bunt to end Gavin Williams' perfect game. We'll come back. We'll switch it to football. And Julian Sain, where he's improved, you'll hear it from him next. Rothman.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently. For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Hey there, happy Monday. Lots of sunshine for the remainder of the day. Highs right around 82 degrees, but come overnight tonight, lows in the 60s. It's going to feel quite nice tomorrow morning with lower humidity to start off your Tuesday morning. Highs tomorrow, lots of sunshine, right around 86 degrees. I'm your 10 Weather Impact Meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
No hot takes, no dancing, plenty of stupid. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
All right, here we go. camp will open up this week for Ohio State. They'll get after it. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. That was always my fear on moving the season up. Like, if they want to avoid it going too late. Like, I'm more into have it go later than move it up. I really am. I don't need to see games in 90 plus. Now, I know in Florida and other places, but man, it's when you're pushing the season more back into the summer, I just feel like that's a mistake.
Good.
It's a mistake for the players, everybody. Nobody wants to play in that heat.
They'll be hydrated. They all the sports science we've got going on, all the AI now that's available for these guys.
No, telling you when to drink.
I hear what you're saying, though, because it's something that coaches do have to think about, and I'm sure we've all heard coaches talk about this. When you have to go through these practices, whether it's college or the NFL, right now, you need to be aware of this, right? You don't want to run your guys into the ground, so it's a situation of, do we need to practice inside today? If we are going to practice outside in the heat, do we need to limit reps here for this guy, or does this guy need a vet day, or whatever it is? You do have to manage these type of things, but hey, man, like, as a fan, I'm here for it. The sooner the better. Give me all the football I can get. Speaking of football, I do have an update for you. Since you are going to the Hall of Fame game, it looks like your starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers is going to be one Kenny Pickett. So that's who you'll get to see, and we will all get to see.
Will he be wearing both gloves?
I think that's still a thing. I think it's not a thing he has to do. It was a thing that makes him more comfortable because he did have the Whopper Jr. Hands going on, right?
Well, I always talked about it. Like, years ago when I started nicknaming Teddy Two Gloves with Bridgewater, he was that guy. Whatever
Teddy's,
helps you.
Teddy's back with Detroit, I want to say, and got that bill passed in Florida.
I know.
For high school kids. I don't know if it's in the nation or in Florida where coaches are allowed to spend, I think, a certain amount of money on certain things. Because he got popped for looking out for some of his guys for whatever it was, and then the state turned it around and turned it into something that you can do, which I think is good on them.
Yeah.
Because
it's like $15,000.
Yeah, not all these guys have the ability to get everything. So I think that was good. Good stuff.
The Teddy Bridgewater Act.
Right.
The spending cap. It's not bad. I mean, he inspired it, so
yeah.
He should get it named after him. I remember when that first happened, it was a very tough thing to dissect on exactly what had happened there. They're basically, it's high school coaches can use their own money to assist players. Is that right?
That's the way I understand it.
So they're
a certain figure that they can go to. I don't think he can just.
So if you raised money, let's say, like, it doesn't have to be right out of the coach's bank account, does it?
I think it can be. I don't know if has to be through a charity or anything
like that. Well, I'm wondering if a school could do a fundraiser or whatever and do it.
I don't know.
There are a lot of strict rules on how much they can spend, but. I don't think you can recruit players with the money, though.
Okay.
Like, I don't think that's where I think it would be a problem.
I'm okay with that.
We got $15,000 to spend here. Let's allot eight to lure a kid from another school.
I don't think we can do that. No.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get back to Julian Sane here. And he is on, he'll be on a lot of watch lists this year. And Ohio State, from my knowledge, is the only school from the Big Ten to have three on the Maxwell, which is kind of nice. So you'll have Sane, Jeremiah, and Bo Jackson are all going to be on there. And the Maxwell, if you're not familiar, is one of the many awards in college football, but it's basically, it's the college player of the year that's not the Heisman.
So it's the non-quarterback.
No, I can
best
be anybody.
Player of the, no, I get that, but usually the Heisman goes to the quarterback.
Yeah, generally
it would. So this kind of goes to,
I don't know.
How many Maxwell Awards recently have gone to non-quarterbacks, I guess, is what we'd have to get to.
I do believe that a lot of the quarterbacks have won the Maxwell.
Like, is this like the NFL MVP, where like offensive player of the year usually goes to the non-quarterback MVP?
No, I don't think. Okay. I think this is just a who's next in line. And just because you're a quarterback doesn't eliminate you from it, and it doesn't give you an advantage either way. Yeah. I think it does in the Heisman, although running backs can win the Heisman, a lot of them have. So it's generally,
it's a lot of Heisman winners on this list.
Maxwell's
right. Okay. So it's a lot of quarterbacks, right?
Because it's just different people voting. So it's like it's the same award. It's just different people voting. So they're largely voting for the same people.
I gotcha.
So who is voting? Is it the same people, like media people, or like a different set of people who cover the sport?
Judged by a panel of sportscasters, sports writers, and NCAA head coaches.
Okay. So
sportscasters, sports writers.
Well, that would be like, so let me ask you guys this, and I don't know. Would it be people that are calling the games?
Sportscasters, sports writers, and head coaches.
So usually those people aren't doing the Heisman, right? The play-by-play people, they're not.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's the case. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think this goes to more of the best all-around person, and so that does give an opportunity for the receiver or the running back to get it. Certainly it gives Jeremiah Smith, I mean, they've got their own receiver award too, but back to saying, won his first 12 games as a starter for Ohio State, and in the process went to New York. He was a Heisman Trophy finalist. We always thought he had a pretty good chance to get it, and that his completion percentage was 77%. Like, no, all passes aren't created equal. I get that. But the dude had 32 touchdowns. He had 8 picks. And when you set the single season program record at Ohio State at 77%, then certainly you'd be in it. I think he fell short to Bo Nix by a hair and maybe Mac Jones by a hair, but he was right there. And Julian has talked about where he believes he is better, and you get to hear it from him.
I think this offseason I grew a lot in my physical traits, so I think I'm throwing the ball harder. Still growing my game in the processing side, because, you know, when you have coaches like Coach Day and Coach Smith who have been around great quarterbacks and who know the game really well, it's very helpful as a quarterback to be able to process things and kind of train your brain.
He is going to take a step up, and it doesn't mean his completion percentage will. How 77%? I think if his, I would love to ask him, what's your target completion percentage goal this year?
Mm-hmm.
What's realistic? Are you building off? Is this like a sales thing? Wow, we 77%. We got to do better next year. I'm sure maybe in his mind he would say, yeah, my goal is to complete every pass I throw. All right. That's really nice. Mm. Now let's get to reality. What is your target? And I would say anything with a 7 in front of it should be his goal.
I think it's in play for him. Yeah, I think it's in play this year for him. He said 3 words at the end of that clip that we just heard that I think are pretty interesting. It's train the brain. And I think for a player like Julian, or just any player that is as talented as he is, Jeremiah Smith, you pick elite guys around the country, whoever you deem as that, the physical tools are usually always going to be there for a lot of these guys, but what can really elevate these guys into greatness is what he talks about, is the mental part. And that's what I can't wait to see from Julian, because the physical stuff, we're all going to be interested in whether or not he's going to be able to do some damage with his legs this year, which is a needed thing within this offense. But that from the neck up things, right? And seeing things post-snap, pre-snap, just things can slow down at this stage for a quarterback. And I expect that for Julian. And if that does come together, and if he and Arthur Smith and Ryan Day and everybody's on the same page, this should be another really good year for him, because of everything that you mapped out, his ability with his arm to just dissect defenses. He touched on his arm strength being better this season. So maybe he can trust it. Hey, that I wasn't able to maybe, or I didn't have the confidence to put this ball in that window last year because now of my physical tools and me being stronger, I can make that throw this year. So it's just all those things that we probably won't find out until that week 2 game against Texas. But man, if he can check those boxes, we're going to be talking about an absolute monster under center this year.
He adds a couple of those things to his arsenal.
Yeah, man.
The instincts, the knowledge, the IQ. You can't imagine this is going to go in the other direction. And the fact that he feels physically stronger, and he can throw the ball a little bit differently or whatever. We'll know it when we know it. We'll see it. But he is off to an incredible start. His accuracy, where he can put the ball, the guy that he has to throw it to, his decision-making has been already pretty good.
Yeah.
It's the instincts. It's not really decision-making, but that is part of it, right? It's about knowing. But pushing the ball downfield is always a big thing for a quarterback. But the difference, I think, for him is now he has faced something pretty real at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of now he knows what level he has to get to push this thing over the top.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked a lot, and you brought it up, the go-get-it mentality, right? It was something that you focused on a lot with CJ, because we were all watching these games, and it was like, yes, he's doing some really good things, but there's more to do. There's more meat on the bone. For Julian, that's going to be a lot of the focus for all of us is, can he pick up those first downs? Can he pick up those 3 to 4 yards that can make a, you know, third and six turn to a third and one or whatever it is? He's never going to be an electric guy with his legs. Doesn't need to be. I liken him to kind of Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes is quick enough with his legs in the NFL. And for six straight years, Mahomes has racked up 20 rushing first downs. And throughout those 6 years, the longest run he's had is 33 yards. So he's not really going anywhere, but he's effective with those timely runs. That's what Julian's got to do this year.
And it's not. So the Mahomes thing for me is more the athletic instincts. Like I like when he runs and I like how he runs.
Mm-hmm.
He puts an extra fake in. He does something. Mm-hmm. He's got some good footwork. It's not just straight line being able to run.
Right.
Mahomes has a kind of a tricky athletic instinct. He does.
I agree.
And Russell Wilson had it too. All right. We're going to come back in 2 minutes. And it looks like the Guardians got a bat at the deadline here. We'll tell you who that is next. Rothman.org.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The best teams don't always win titles. Sounds like AR and Maddie bragging about their fantasy teams.
Hey, that's cheating.
This is Rothman and Ice.
All right, so there was a trade, or there have been trades, but guards are trying to stick in this thing. They got a pretty good chance. So their problem is they're 3 games back at the Sox now. And in the wild card race, they are, what, 4 back? No.
They're right there. They
have the final spot.
They've got the third wild card spot right there. They're 4.
So they're a good spot.
4 back of Boston, 6.5 back of the New York Yankees.
Wasn't really sure what they'd be able to do, but they wound up getting a guy that I thought maybe even the Brewers would try to get. And the Guardians have a power problem. They do. And they just got Joe Adell from the Angels. And he's a bopper. He is. You and I have talked about him before in fantasy. It's not considered like a massive flashy move. His stats, I'm looking, they've fallen off from last season. So we had 37 home runs last season with almost 100 ribbies. But he's a power hitter. He's only 27. And he doesn't hit really for average, right? I'll have to look. Maybe 2.25.
He's batting .239. Right. Last 3 years, .207, .236, .239.
He swings for the fences every time.
This is what they need. Yeah. They need this type of guy in the middle of their lineup. A guy that's going to come in and help out a team that ranks 27th right now in total home runs, that being the Cleveland Guardians. This has been a thorn in their side for the last few years, is good pitching, good defense, scrappy. They can go about it and do all the little things. But sometimes when you run into the Yankees and the Astros and some of these other teams on the AL side of things, you got to be able to bang with them. And I think right now this can help them do that. So wherever he's going to line up, be in the lineup, I'm sure it'll be somewhere around Jose Ramirez. You're going to want him when that Ramirez DeLauder window. I think he's going to be in the middle of the bat type of guy for them, and I think this is going to be helpful because he's going to run into a few dingers for them. And if guys like Kwan and some others and can set the table for J-Ram and guys like Adell, these guys are going to clean up every once in a while. And so I actually like this move for them. This is the type of power that they need.
It's on a $5 million deal.
Yeah, not
bad. It's a minimal cost. He's going to be under team control through next year. So that gives the Guardians the flexibility they need if they decide he's a good fit long-term or whether he's not. And they can find out. So that just came down in the last few minutes.
He's also the guy that robbed 3 home runs this year. So maybe he can do some of that in Cleveland. Went in the stands for one of those. Got an amazing
picture.
They
both count for one.
Crazy, man.
Right?
Unreal.
Whether you hit one or rob one.
Yep.
It's all the same.
Yep.
All right, so that's there. We heard Jimmy Haslam speak this week, or this weekend. And he was up there not alone. Right? J.W. Johnson.
He was in the building, too.
And so J-Dub is a partner in the HSG, the Haslam Sports Group. And he's more of the business side, media side, marketing side, partnership side, fan experience, all that stuff.
Give me the exact title again for J.W. Johnson.
managing partner.
Okay. So just managing partner of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the best job is the silent partner. That's what I want.
Just never have to be seen.
I'm fully invested, but I'm I'm somewhere else playing golf.
Pop up on a Zoom meeting.
Let us know if we're making any money today.
Once a month, pop up on a Zoom meeting. That's right. You're good, yeah.
Or pop in a suite at some point. Preferably maybe the Milwaukee Bucks. All right, so J-Dub was with him and Haslam was there. And where should we start here? There are a couple things. One, they did revisit, I believe TLC has this, the Myles Garrett trade, and I think Haslam kind of sidestepped this one.
I don't have that one.
Okay.
I have either you want Haslam on the Browns in the win total, or do you want J.W. Johnson not punting?
Let's go with, not punting. Like they're never going to punt ever? That's the strategy?
Exactly.
We're going for it on every fourth down.
Blank them punts.
Says J.W. Johnson. All right, so let's go with that. I want to hear. I'm more curious about that one, about J Dub's opinion on the whole thing.
They're always going for it.
Terry, I just want to say we're not punting on this season by any means. 27, whatever, that's great. But we have high expectations for this team. You know, like I said, we had a lot of opportunity last year to win more games than we didn't. But this year is by no means a punt whatsoever. We're excited about how we're going to play and, you know, see how the schedule shapes out. But the guys are ready to win this year. It's not, there's no mandate like, hey, we got to just focus on 27 and beyond. It's every year we want to win.
Now, can you imagine if he did have that? Like, I always ask myself when we do this stuff, what was the alternative? To be overly honest, guys, we know where we are as a team. We're rebuilding.
Yeah, you can.
And we've got to figure out our quarterback situation, which we think we can this year. We traded away the best defensive player
of his generation
in our game.
Yeah, whatever, yes.
And so we realize that we've got one foot in this year and one giant leap in for Brook Park. Like, that would have been the honest thing to say. It doesn't mean we're not going to try, and it doesn't mean the guys that we put on the field with our brand new coach aren't going to be coached well, but we understand reality of where we are as an organization, and we've got a lot of things to figure out this year, and we're looking forward to doing that. Now, that would have been honest. Instead, they go with the got-to-sell-tickets route. We're not punting on this season. No, we're not going to, you know, I know you're not going to forfeit, but there's got to be somewhere in the middle.
I think
it's real.
Yeah, I kind of understand what he's saying because I am one of the people that is seeing the vision of where this is headed. The biggest part is always going to be what the heck they're going to figure out at quarterback. But I think both J.W. Johnson, Andrew Berry, Jimmy Haslam, the collective of the decision makers, I think, feel pretty good about what they're building. Removing Myles Garrett is never going to be this, hey, we're in great shape feeling. Like, that's just foolish. He's one of the most dominant forces we've seen. He's a Hall of Famer. We all understand that. But let's live in a world where we are talking about this new draft class, KC Concepcion, Denzel Boston, that crew. They hit on a few of those guys, then you are on your way. So I they are kind of one foot in, one foot out this season of tanking / non-tanking. I think they're going to be scrappy. I don't think it's just going to be a horrendous showing week in and week out from the Browns, but this is about 27 and beyond. To me, this year is about developing the young guys, building the young core, and finding the young guys that you think are going to be pillars for you down the road. And they've done some business over the last few days with the Grant Delpit deal and the Denzel Ward deal. So those guys are going to be around for the foreseeable future. We know the young core from last year is going to be a big piece of this. What about this next draft class? If we're coming out of this season with those guys being ballers, then you're cooking. There's something cooking in the kitchen that smells pretty good for the Browns.
I'm all for what you said. That's not what he's saying. He's not going with, I think we're positioned well for next year and beyond. That's not what he's selling. He's selling this year. And that's the difference. There's got to be somewhere in the middle. You had the number one passing defense last year. You lost the sack record, the game record. Like, yeah, they got a good piece back, but he's not that guy. Their passing offense was last in the league. Is that getting better? Their rushing offense was 26th. Like, so I just think they're either a little delusional or they're trying to sell the fans something that isn't there. Maybe they do get a little bit fortunate. You heard him mention the schedule. I'm glad he actually did that. Like, well, you see how the schedule lays out. You could tell right away that he was thinking, okay, well, maybe we've got a winnable schedule. But they are a team that I'm not going to judge next year on this year completely, unless, because I don't really know where the quarterbacks are going to, what they're going to do with this team. And I, unless you have something that you know of coming out of here with the quarterback stuff, and we can get to that later in the show, but until they prove that they have a leader at that position, I don't know how you take him seriously.
That's fair. You touched on Jimmy Haslam. He did throw out the quote about the Myles Garrett trade was Andrew Berry's decision. And this is, again, another showcase publicly from Jimmy Haslam, where he's really confident in Andrew Berry. First time around when Myles Garrett requested the trade, say, hey, I want to talk to the owner about the team. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Haslam told him, go talk to Andrew about these things. And so that's why I believe Jimmy and JW right now are feeling mm-hmm. pretty good because of what Andrew Berry is starting to build. And so this collective unit, these guys that are moving all these pieces around on the board for the Browns, I mean, it's crazy to say, but you remove a guy like Myles Garrett, I still feel pretty good about where this is headed.
It's all based on that Garrett trade, too.
Right.
That helps.
The return they get from those picks and all that.
The timing was really rough because half of the fan base probably wanted to keep him because he's that good, and half the fan base was like, well, what's it led to? What are we really hanging our hat on with him? Individual records? It's a team game. Yeah. Like, they want to be Browns fans. They're Garrett fans, but they want it to equal something. So at 31 years old, they had a decision to make. Now, I don't know whether he requested the trade or both, whether they finally bent the knee and said, okay, we want you to go to a winner and we want to build a winner. Let's do that.
My thoughts are, regardless of him signing the contract or not, his feelings never really changed. Is that publicly he was going to play the game of, hey, I'm happy to be here because I'm making $40 million a year, but I still don't want to be here because I want to go play somewhere where they're winning. I don't think that ever changed for him behind the scenes.
I agree with you. I think he was always ruffling stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to come back. Party like a Rothstar on deck.
Roth.com.
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, just to name a few, live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Let's all gather into the Kiki.
It's time to party like a rock star.
All right, Ice. I didn't see it, but I'm going to lead off with it.
Okay.
All right. There's a new king of the domestic box office.
Oh.
So Spider-Man, Brand New Day, as they say, webbed up $360 million during the opening weekend. I don't know what it cost to make this film. And I guess include Canada. So they broke the record for the highest grossing debut of all time. The previous record was $357 million set by this movie in 2019.
You going to tell us?
I thought maybe you'd get. Why don't you just give a guess? I'll tell you.
What was the movie?
Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked you, because I thought maybe you'd get.
You know all right. That.
So globally, Spider-Man got $932 million globally. That is not the record. The record is Avengers Endgame, which got $1.2 billion. So Spider-Man beat it domestically, didn't beat it globally. But the fact that, I mean, it's pretty amazing the fact that Odyssey is still out there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's everywhere, right? On all the Screen X, 4DX, all that stuff. So Brand New Day is on pace to be the fourth billion-dollar film of 2026. I can't believe there are that many. So all this crap about nobody's going to the movies anymore.
We're in there.
Well, they're going for the right one, apparently. Toy Story 5, Michael, I don't know. And Super Mario Galaxy
movie. I think that was the Michael Jackson movie.
Oh, Lion Gate. Yes,
that's right. I think that's what that was.
So those were the other three.
Massive year for Tom Holland. He goes back to back with the Odyssey and Spider-Man.
He was in Odyssey?
Yeah. He was in the Odyssey, too. He plays Matt Damon's
what's
son
his name?
In the Odyssey. I forget his character's name.
But what's his real name here?
Tom Holland. So okay. He is Anne Hathaway and Matt Damon's son in the Odyssey. So he goes from that to this. And Spider-Man got my money yesterday.
It did.
I was in the building, and it was really, really good. The cast is great. Tom Holland, Zendaya, John Bernthal, who else? Florence Pugh. I mean, you get some pop-ups. You know what happens in the Marvelverse. I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, but wait, I thought Tom Holland was in his bag because he's been attached to Iron Man and all that. This was kind of his standalone film as Spider-Man, and I thought he knocked it out of the park.
He got $10 million as a supporting actor for Odyssey?
He did a lot in that movie.
All right.
It wasn't like just a couple lines here or there. It wasn't like Travis Scott's role in the Odyssey where you see him at the beginning and end. He did a lot.
Well, if he got $10 million for the Odyssey, that means he got at least that or more for Spider-Man.
Oh, as the guy.
All right, so let's just double that and just say he got 20.
Yeah.
So that means between the two, he picked up 30 mil.
So what we're coming to is Tom Holland right now is partying like a rock star.
That's right. That's why.
Amazing.
Yeah.
2026. I love that you brought that up. First candidate for me, we brought up the Guardians earlier. If you missed it, Guardian fans, you have traded for Joe Adele. So you got some new offensive help coming in. But the guy right now that I want to talk about is Gavin Williams. Gavin Williams right now, ladies and gentlemen, second in all of Major League Baseball in strikeouts with a .178, only behind The Miz. Five straight starts with at least double-digit Ks for Gavin Williams. You're talking about at least five straight starts where he pitched into the sixth inning of every game. And so this guy right now, not giving up a whole bunch of earned runs, but sending a lot of guys back to the dugout. So this dude is just an old school, I'm coming downhill, throwing as hard as I can at 6'6", 250, and you probably aren't going to hit it. Gavin Williams against the Arizona Diamondbacks yesterday, dominant, 5 2/3, one hit, no earned runs, 10 strikeouts, and only one walk. He's doing the darn thing right now for the Guardians. Gavin Williams partying like a rock star.
All right, I'll stick with baseball, and I'll just listen, the Dodgers are playing the game. They're playing the game better than most. They acquire Tarek Skubal from the Tigers. And listen, this is not a mystery. Detroit had to move on from him before he walked as a free agent. He's been the most valuable trade asset for the past 3 years. He's generational, coming off back-to-back Cy Young Awards. And they get him and they give up. The Dodgers give up prospects in their pipeline. So they gave up a 21-year-old outfielder in Zaire Hope, who, if you believe this stuff, was the number 25 prospect in baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. Three prospects in all. A couple of relievers go to Detroit. They got a big arm guy in River Ryan. Brady Smith was a third rounder a couple years ago. But Skubal is the man. Won the AL ERA title last couple years. And here's the cool one to mark down. He'll probably pitch at Detroit at the end of the month. Dodgers are going to Detroit August 28th through the 30th. It should line up.
Okay.
I mean, I would hope it would line up. And then that would be something to see, but I'll give it to them. They took the pressure. They got the guy. They outbid everyone, and they got him. They want to rack up another one because not many teams can win three straight.
I like it.
And so the Dodgers are going for it. As much as I don't love it, we'll talk more about it in the deep dive at 2 o'clock, yeah. I can't play that same game, which is that it's unfair because it was fair for – now, it really isn't fair because a lot of the – lower market teams couldn't do this.
Yeah.
That's what makes it unfair. But they're playing under the current rules. And when we get into the deep dive, like if this doesn't get to some kind of hard cap, hard floor, like that's where baseball needs to go.
No.
You need to get teams spending to a certain level.
I don't love that.
You need teams not being able to spend more than others. Like if you had that, Maddie, I'm not taking the lesser teams off the hook. They have to spend.
I don't know.
We'll you want to leave it the way?
Yes, right. I want to leave it the way it is. I want to leave it the exact same way it is. Last candidates for me. I'm going to the WNBA for this one because yesterday in the background I had the Indiana Fever and Minnesota Lynx on. One of my friends was telling me you got to lock in. These are two of the best teams in the game right now. Okay, sure. Let's see what they got. I walked away and I was like, Kelsey Mitchell is an absolute star. She's a star. The former Buckeye. I know Caitlin Clark gets a lot of the run. Kelsey Mitchell, 37 points yesterday. 3 assists in the game. 6 of 8 from 3. The Fever doing the darn thing right now. They're playing well. But this is about the former Buckeye who last year was getting MVP votes. And again, this season is putting together a great showing. And so Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Mitchell balling for the Indiana Fever. And on the opposite side of that, the rookie Olivia Miles is special too. And so my friend was right. These women are getting to it, man. Fun game happening in the WNBA. Minnesota Lynx, Indiana Fever. Olivia Miles, Kelsey Mitchell, Caitlin Clark all partying like a rock star yesterday.
You used to do the little warm glow shuffle over to Indiana to check out some of this action.
There's a vibe over there, too, man. She brought the city out. Caitlin Clark does. There's no doubt. She arrived to Indiana, and the city shows up for her and Kelsey Mitchell night in and night out. It's fun.
All right. That's Party Like a Rock Star for today. We'll come back top of the hour. The floor is yours. Best call gets the Skyline gift card. Line them up, 614-821-9710. Tell TLC I'll put you in the queue, and we'll put you on. The floor is yours is next. Rothman.
Better.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. Ohio State quarterback Julian Sand, wideout Jeremiah Smith, and running back Bo Jackson were named to the Maxwell Award preseason watch list, given to the best all-around player in college football. Buckeyes fall camp starts Thursday morning at 9. The Fan will be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, starting with T-Bone and Tyvus at 6. MLB with the trade deadline 5 hours away. The Guardians landed outfielder Joe Adell from the Angels for catching prospect Jacob Cozart. Adell has slugged 16 homers and 62 RBIs this season. Guardians and Reds are both off today. College hoops, Ohio State men's team faces Equipo 2 in Puerto Rico at 1:30. Ohio State women's team landed a commitment from Maya Wilson, the top player in Minnesota's 2027 class. This update is brought to you by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 ultimate Buckeye experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Time for your calls on Rothman and Ice. The floor is yours. Call the show right now. 614-821-9710. Whether you have a gripe.
I've never seen such incompetence.
Or some praise.
You're the best voice in sports radio, man. And I really mean that.
The floor is yours.
Come on!
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, second hour of the program. The floor is yours, 821-9710. Winner is going to get a Skyline gift card. Feeling good at Skyline time, enjoying a couple of cheese conies or a Skyline three-way. Always makes the day better.
Let's go.
Jimmy Haslam ought to grab one of those. I can't believe he was up there with J-Dub.
Hey, man.
Hey, this is going to be a tandem jump out of the plane.
The less questions I got to ask, the better.
I'll let JW handle that one.
Jimmy's probably thinking, man, I've been busy this all season. I traded Miles. I traded Giannis.
Like, I didn't trade anybody. Andrew Berry did that. Why wasn't the natural follow-up? So for a trade like that, you don't require him to come to you.
I think it was probably, hey, I've got this deal available for us. You good if I make the move? And Jimmy's like, yeah.
Stamp it.
Right. And on the other side of that is what an owner like Jerry Jones, who in title is the GM as well. But there are other owners that want to be more hands-on than others. And some owners, I have to imagine, really care about the wins and the losses. Some owners, I have to imagine, hey, let's talk about the financials or people coming through the gates or people feel like all of that. I think it's going to hit different for a lot of different owners, but it does sound like there's a lot of trust in the hands of Andrew Berry coming from his owner, which I'm sure he has to love as a GM.
You and I discussed it. It was probably a trade that needed to happen, that the team has a goal of winning because every team has a goal of winning. Like, I'd find it very weird if any of them said, our goal is not to win this year. Who could ever say that?
Nobody publicly.
You can't. It's never done. But I think there's a way to kind of massage it into the conversation, which I did earlier. And I think they could have. And so they're rewarding some of the dudes that they feel have earned it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but my goodness, I mean, let's be honest about where we are right now. They're in a rebuild.
They are in a rebuild. And I was thinking about this. You know, a lot of the focus is going to be on Jared Verse, right? And what he needs to be and all that, which I understand. But I think we need to start shining a little bit more light on Mason Graham and what he's going to be this season. This was a top five pick 2 years ago now. And so that's the guy that, along with Jared Verse, they got to go. Nobody's going to be able to fill the shoes of Myles Garrett. He's an all-timer. But I think we need to be talking a little bit more about Mason Graham and how much pressure needs to be on him this season to not only help out with the Myles Garrett trade, but pay off on where he was drafted two years ago now.
Yes, I remember that, talking about it. He's a very, very good football player. But he wasn't really viewed as some game wrecker. He just was a really, really good football player in the interior of that D-line. But I'm with you. So he's got to leverage what he is into making this count, because you're exactly right. Where he was picked, round one, pick five.
We got to go. Like, let's go, man.
Yeah.
He's got to be a force.
All right, TLC, who you got? Light him up.
All right, we got a few here. Let's start with Muggsy's Leaper. Good reference. Is in North Canton.
Muggsy's Leaper, the floor is yours.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm driving up here, way out of my element. I'm looking for Haslam and Tyvus. I haven't seen either one yet. I'm worried about left-hand turn gatekeepers. I'm going down a 40-mile-an-hour road. Someone's turning left in front of me. That's fine. But then they get over to the right just enough that I can't go around them. What's the purpose of that?
The purpose of it is, and you have to be honest now, you have to answer this question honestly. Were you, like, tail-grabbing their ass? Like, were you, like, a little too far? Like, were you one of those people that was riding too close?
Or no, in a work vehicle, I was keeping 10 miles an hour per car length.
So you're saying when they're stopped to make the left, they're doing it a little too wide, or they're taking the turn wide?
They moved over to their right, even though the engineer left enough pavement for both of us to go by each other. They made it so I couldn't get by, and I think that's a strange flex, unless you're letting somebody out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, man.
I'm with you, too.
I understand that. Now, I'm full honesty, full disclosure. If someone is tailgating me, in a, like, a lower speed area, like if I'm coming into the neighborhood or whatever and it's coming down to 25.
You brake checking them?
No, I'm not brake checking. I don't want anybody running into me, but I'm going the speed limit.
Okay.
And then when I get to my right turn, I am going to, because you know what happens? The second I put on my signal, boom, you know, someone's going to try to go wide behind, you know, around me like 50 miles an hour in the neighborhood.
Okay.
So when I put on my signal, I make a nice wide right turn.
Let me ask you this,
sir. They can hold on before they have to, like, get by me so they're home in 10 seconds instead of 15.
Over or under 4.5 birds given to another driver in your life?
In my lifetime?
In your lifetime. Over or under 4.5?
Probably taking the over on 4.5. If you would have said 40.5, I would have had to think about it.
Okay.
Probably under.
Okay, so this is...
I didn't do anything illegal.
But you don't mind giving a double bird back, is what you're saying, while you're driving.
I kind of avoid that at all. At this day and age, man, you don't know what's going to set somebody off. But I feel like...
Is that Anthony Rothman from Rothman?
You're coming back into the neighborhood, and you're driving 45 in a 25... You know, I'm just
slow,
like, there's
down.
People walking dogs and people,
it's
like, it's just ridiculous.
It is.
You're home already. Like, what's the extra 8 seconds?
Might have to go to the bathroom, man, you know? Maybe
well,
an
right.
emergency.
See, you know? Now you would be a good defense attorney on that.
Who's next, TLC?
We got a couple more. Let's go to Vaughn in Columbus.
Love it. Vaughn, the floor is yours, my man.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. Outstanding.
Man, I got a lot I wanted to touch on, so I'll just go rapid fire. They were kind of telling me, like, why didn't you talk about Baker last week? Because Baker does not deserve to quarterback my team. Let me tell you why. We know I'm a Buccaneers fan, right? He's like, oh, we offered him $50 million for 2 years. He does not deserve $50 million. We missed the playoffs last year. He choked against the Commanders. We were up 2 touchdowns. He fumbled and threw a pick. We lost to the Commanders. Everybody forgets that. game-winning touchdown drive. Jared Goff just scored. They keep comparing him to Jared Goff. Jared Goff just scored. Baker comes down, throws a pick. That was 2 years ago. People always forget. The fans do not forget. There are fans begging, oh, Baker. Some of these guys are not elevators. Like Myles Garrett, elevator. Matthew Stafford, yes, I'm biased, elevator. You feel me? They're going to bring your receivers up. I also want to talk about how franchises just waste away, like team, like Ruffman just said, every team's trying to win. No, they're not. There are people who are very fine.
No, they say they're set. What my point was, they say they're trying to win. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think they're more fine just showing the true face. I think these owners are in it for the business. They're still going to make jersey sales. They're still going to sell tickets. These horrible franchises have cursed their fans. You shouldn't have to be tied to the Browns, the Jets. They have proven over and over again they will either make bad franchise decisions, they will employ bad players, or it'll just be a cycle of the same thing over and over again. The Browns haven't had a big-name wide receiver since when? Like, the last time I remember was them getting excited about Odell Beckham Jr., and Jarvis Landry was his number two. Of course their pass offense sucks. But now, yes, every time it's, oh, we got something for you to get excited about. We have a bunch of draft picks that we know nothing what to do with them. Or even if we do, we might trade them in a few years because we'll pay the wrong guys. Like, we just – these owners, like, fans give these franchises too much leeway. We see it in baseball. They're all complaining about the teams that actually want to go do something, go make moves. The Panthers just sucked. As a Buccaneers fan, I look at the Panthers and even the Saints, like, oh – this is what happens when a franchise actually cares about their fans and they make the right picks. They pay the right players. It, I don't know.
Vaughn, let me hop in here, Vaughn. I'm glad that you called in because we did talk a lot about Baker last week. And I'm assuming there's not a lot of Tampa Bay fans in Columbus, Ohio. But since you are one of them and you say that you don't think he's worth $50 million a year, what do you want them to do moving forward?
Right. So I think if you would have kept Mike Evans, who, like, yes, you have Emeka, McMillan, Godwin, but they're all variations of the same receiver. You lost a big body outside receiver. You got one you thought in the third round. Okay, the offense is not a problem. This team has not been built to win since Brady decided to come over here because our defense has deteriorated and our team cannot draft on the defensive side of the ball. Really, I believe our offense is so good that you can put a myriad of quarterbacks that right there. That's why I say Baker's not worth it. Because, yes, he is a top 10 to top 15 quarterback, and there are a bunch of teams that I said are okay with being just mediocre that you can cycle different quarterbacks. I like Baker. But if we're not, we are about to be a middle-of-the-road team because we lost. Well, Vito Vea wants out. Baker's talking about, oh, I'm going to prove it to you guys again. If he brings the turnovers down, that would be the only way to prove it. But, dude, this is an extension they're offering. You already had 3 years to do this.
Okay, I got it now, Vaughn. I got you now. Okay, I understand. It's not really – it doesn't sound like it's a Baker thing for him. It's where the team is right now, where he thinks the team is headed, to where he doesn't think paying him where they're not in this window would be worth it. Because he did say at the end that he believes he's a top 10 to top 15 quarterback. And to me, that's where the conversation ends.
It's fine. He isn't 25 anymore, though. That's the difference also. You know, he's 31. He's got an injury history. And
31 doesn't scare me. Like it
might scare you with him, though.
At that position. It does it with him, though, because he's played in every game since he's been a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
He's got a good history of that. But I know that playing hurt is also not completely playing effective. So if he's always hurt and he's tough, that means he's playing, but he may not be as effective as I need him to be. So play another year, prove it. I'll either tag you or transition tag you at less money, and then we'll see.
I just don't think I need to prove anything to a franchise that doesn't have an answer but me right now.
Well, then they'll let him go, and then he can go and go to Pittsburgh or wherever he wants to go.
Which I think will be a massive miss.
I think the knock on Tampa here is that what's the plan?
That's where I'm at.
What is the plan? Maybe they don't need to know. Maybe their plan is my plan. Maybe their act is, what's that, what I always say? I think your act is not having an act. That's your act.
So
I think not having a plan is their plan.
Which I think is foolish.
We'll come back with more calls and pick a winner next. Rothman.
Bishop and Friends.
I've been fighting this fight for about a year with NBC. I finally got him on kind of a longer, flowing, hopeful look.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Diamond Seller.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Hey there, happy Monday. Lots of sunshine for the remainder of the day. Highs right around 82 degrees, but come overnight tonight, lows in the 60s. It's going to feel quite nice tomorrow morning with lower humidity to start off your Tuesday morning. Highs tomorrow, lots of sunshine, right around 86 degrees. I'm your 10 Weather Impact meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
We are your radio home for the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. We may have a bit of a football problem.
Oh, yeah.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. These two have a ton in common. Anthony loves hockey, and Maddie's always cold. This is Rothman and Ice.
All right, back at it. You guys didn't comment about my wide right turn to try to slow down the neighborhood a little bit. Were you in favor of that? That's like an in or out. Like, did you like that move? Turn on the signal and just do kind of a little more of a wide?
I'm not a guy that likes confrontation while I'm driving. So I don't think that's...
Well, what would have happened? What could have happened? They follow me into the neighborhood and ask why I made a wide right turn?
Pistol whip you when you get out of the car and then throw you in the back of their van.
Is it a windowless van?
Yes.
Well, that'd be a problem. It's got windows, I'm okay. Cruising in my windowless van.
TLC, are you a person that gives the bird while you're driving?
Never. It's only been given to me twice.
Okay. Yeah, I've never done it either. Recently,
I told the story of how there were two people at the red light that turned green who apparently were old friends. And they were just sitting there chatting. The light turned green and... Two cars talking to one another, and then someone else tried to like weave in between them. And then, I guess the bird wouldn't have been to me. So I'm actually at one. But
what about a honk?
I didn't honk because I didn't know if an animal was like walking in front of them or something.
Good.
So I was trying to give a little benefit of the doubt there. Right. And then once I saw someone roll their window down and wave goodbye, I'm like, oh, you guys were just talking here, and the light's been green for 10 seconds. 10 seconds is a long time at a green light.
It is.
All right. So I'm out. So you guys were not in favor of my move to slow down the neighborhood. If someone is tailgating at a high rate of speed into the neighborhood at 25, I shouldn't.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying be careful out there in the streets. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I like that you're you know, kind of, was it Paul Bart, the mall cop? You're going kind of mall in your mall cop bag, policing things. Not mad at it. Just be careful, big dog, because I've seen you out there at the memorial.
I'll tell you what. You know? Here's what we do. You at Ripple Baseball.
Shout out to Ripple.
Loan me a radar gun.
Okay.
And then I'll sit on the hill with a baseball radar.
You're out.
And see how many people slow down based on thinking I'm there for some civic duty.
It, you got to go full home plate umpire attire. I need mask. I need the whole thing.
Well, no, I'm not trying to impersonate either way. I just want to see if that would be enough of a deterrent if they saw me just with a radar gun.
I wonder how law enforcement would feel about that. That's got to be against the law.
Not if I'm not impersonating a cop. I'm not in uniform. I can't just stand in the driveway with a radar gun and chart people coming in.
A lawn chair, your lemonade stand.
Doing an experiment.
And a radar gun.
All right, who's next?
We got two more. Let's go to Joey, who is in Bexley.
Joey Bexley, the floor is yours, my man.
Whoa, breathing like Darth Vader.
Yes, hey, guys.
What's up, Joey? Hey,
sorry,
man.
I'm in Lowe's. I'm in Lowe's right now.
Getting things done.
So,
tell them the sponsors. So, let's build something together.
I'm in Bexley and drive on Broad Street all the time, and anybody on the east side that drives down Broad Street knows how much of a disaster that kind of is. So... In Whitehall, I'm not sure if it's Whitehall or not, on Broad, in front of the DSCC or whatever it's named these days, they put in a massive two-light system that probably cost about $500,000 that stalls traffic, and there is never any cars going in and out of that place. And I'm wondering why the city would spend so much money to create a traffic block for cars that are not there. Hmm. It seems like a terrible use of tax dollars, and it's annoying me, and it slows me down, and it slows everybody down. So that's my little rant today.
Okay.
What do you think?
I mean, I'm trying to understand. So this is a red light, green light system? Is that what he said? Like a two-light?
At the least busy intersection.
Two-light traffic system?
That's my understanding.
Roundabouts are always the way. Keep it moving. Now.
Yeah, there's been some accidents in the real roundabout, too, when the right lane is, when there are two lanes coming in, like that one near me, like Hamilton, Westerville, near like BJ's and Sheets. There's a roundabout, but two lanes are coming in. Mm. And if I'm coming around and I'm doing a little bit of an Indy 500 because I'm going back the other way, that right lane, they think they can just keep going for some reason.
Yeah, you can't have a multi-lane roundabout. Like
that's what the one is.
By Bridge Park, oh my gosh, when that first got put in there, crazy.
Big Bridge Park guy. You're there all the time, I feel like.
I'm just sure doing a squad from kicking Dublin. There.
Okay.
So it's right. Just it's a place to go.
Yeah.
Where the cool kids hang out.
All Dublinites go there and just hang out.
Got a lot of experience.
Maddie, I don't have enough experience with what he's talking about.
I don't think I've run into this exact situation either. I feel for him because anybody that's inconvenienced when you're just trying to get somewhere and you run into a situation where it's like, you ever been in a traffic jam and you're literally in like standstill traffic or you're driving 5 to 10 miles an hour and then you get past whatever it was and you're like, this wasn't even an accident or anything. Like, this was like, I don't know, a random cone or something that was in the way. Like, I don't know. Those inconveniences drive me insane. So I feel what Joey's saying, even though I haven't driven in that exact scenario.
It's got to be to lower some accident rates. It has to. There has to be some motivation behind it, that there's some visibility or something in that intersection that used to be bad that isn't anymore. Maybe that's why it's so great, Joey. Maybe the light system's working. I don't know. Maybe everyone's avoiding the area. I don't really know, but I'd have to experience it to be able to comment on that, Fuller. Who you got?
We'll round it out with Danny in Delaware.
Danny in Delaware, your dime, your dance floor.
I'm brake checking their asses, and I'm flipping birds left and right, boys. Columbus drivers are idiots. But I also know it's not the best time in the sports calendar when we're talking about driving habits, and Matty Ice was firing off some WNBA takes. So at least Mr. Razor Ramon is back in the booth today, though, after the Salisbury Steak incident last week. TLC, welcome back. Hopefully you're feeling better. I did want to let you know, though, that HR is on your patterns of missing Mondays. Pretty sure I have clocked in more hours than you have during The Floor Is Yours, right here on 97.1 The Fan, brought to you by Roosters. Your best ability
Skyline.
Is availability, so you got to be there. It's Roosters is so much better. Sorry. That's just my opinion.
You've just eliminated yourself for winning the gift card.
That's okay. I eliminate myself every week. So we are in August, though, and we are that much closer to Cleveland Browns football, and I already think that the Browns have made the best head coaching decision because Todd Monken is doing everything Stefanski didn't involving Shador and Dion to avoid any type of controversy. So no matter who he chooses, I am very happy with the decision. And real quick, speaking of the Browns quarterbacks, I did see the new Toy Story movie over the weekend. What's the difference between Buzz Lightyear and Deshaun Watson?
I don't know if I want to answer this.
Buzz Lightyear goes limp when people walk into the room. Have a day, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All righty.
Self-dismissal.
Yeah. It was. There was a dunk in there right at the end there. First of all, the only thing I'll agree with what he said was that Columbus drivers can be idiots. Or maybe he just said are idiots. I will tell you, the wild, wild west is now 670 going north. Past the airport.
Going north. Okay.
It is a damn free-for-all. I am telling you, it's changing lanes. It's way too fast. Mm-hmm. It's you've got 62 and 270 and go this way to Easton. But I mean, going up there, Maddie,
gives you anxiety.
It is a speedway.
Okay.
And they used to. They used to put a cop on 670. But ever since they opened up that lane, that through lane on the left,
yeah,
or even when I was coming into the city, they'd have it on Leonard. They'd have a cop sitting there. I haven't seen a cop on 670 like radaring.
Well, we just found
forever.
We just found another location for you. You said you're going to be up in your neighborhood with a radar gun.
Yeah.
Now you just leave the show, go straight to 670,
right.
Find a spot and do it there. You're definitely getting in trouble for that. That can't be allowed. It's just a regular civilian.
A regular civilian as a radar gun. Yeah, but I'm not pulling anybody over.
I think you're getting arrested for that. That can't be allowed.
For doing what?
Tracking
how fast everybody's going?
I can't imagine that that's allowed.
Doing it on my own time, unpaid. Try to help the city.
Where are you going to submit your research?
I don't know.
Once you have these times logged.
If there are any police men or women listening right now,
send an anonymous tip.
Can you please answer this for me? Would AR be allowed to go out on 670 with a radar gun?
Not out onto 670.
On a ramp off of 670.
I don't think I could sit there in a vehicle.
That's where I'm trying to get at.
No, I think if I was on foot,
I don't think that's allowed either.
I could go up on a gobbler's knob and just start radaring people.
Dwight Schrute
might be able to do it.
I need to know if that's allowed now. Somebody please
let us
know.
I'm on the team, man. I'm ready to help. All right, who you got? You're going to pick it next. We got Adam King sauntering
in two
minutes. Muggsy's Leaper.
Shout out to Muggsy.
Gets the Skyline gift card. Feeling good at Skyline time. We'll be enjoying a couple of cheese conies or a Skyline three-way, always making the day better. We got Adam King up next in 2 minutes. Rothman and
Benefits.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hear ye, hear ye. You've now entered Adam's King. Dumb. With 10 TV's Adam King. Don't be shy. Gather around. Stupid conversation awaits you.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
You got an open?
Wow.
Before we did.
I could cry.
As a show.
Sounds like this is off the Game of
Thrones. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. All right. It's a little, it kind of fits the Iron Throne thing we do on Saturdays. All right.
See, I'm hearing more like Banjo Old West kind of feel.
No.
I'm
hearing
like Ireland type stuff.
Yeah, this is straight out of like medieval kingdom, you know?
Medieval times.
I like it.
You guys didn't know medieval times.
That's where you go and you eat and they fight each other, right? Oh, no. That's a different thing.
No, it is. It was basically from the cable guy. But there are, I don't know if there still are, medieval times that we used to go to as kids.
Yeah, and you would go and they would stab each other and you'd eat a chicken leg.
There'd be some jousting, that's right.
Yeah, it's all scripted, but you love it. You get a giant, you know, drink that you're sitting there enjoying. I used to get a nice Diet Coke when I was a wee lad.
Hey, so, what do you get now?
New angle. This is how radio people feel about radio. The TV guy got the open before us.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a cool open. I liked it. Good work, gentlemen. We were debating last week. You were like, we need a name. I actually think it fits perfectly. I mean, I'm an idiot. Let's have a good time, you know?
Did you get all of the questions answered that you were going to pose when we talked last week where you're going to Chicago for the Big Ten football meetings?
Yeah, you know what's so funny is sometimes you can get into these things and you can come in with a million questions, and then after about four questions, you're like, well, they've all been answered. Like, I don't need to ask anymore. I felt like we got a great amount of time with the coaches and the players, talked to them all one-on-one. I could have talked to them each for an hour. I think it worked out really well that we hadn't, like, I hadn't talked to Ryan in a little while in an interview setting, and to be able to kind of lean on that and dive into this team more, I really enjoyed it. Like, I said to him just straight up in our interview, I said, listen, it's August, and I don't know anything about the Arthur Smith offense. I have been poking and prodding, and we're getting nothing. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's the offense. You'll see it. It's Ohio State's offense.
My offense.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying without saying it, right?
So it was like, I'm just thinking like, man, I'm excited. Like, it got me excited for the season because there are good answers that we got. I did get an answer. He said, you know, being named a captain gives you confidence because we've had that debate of Julian, if you should force a captaincy to just kind of give him that extra boost. But I thought it was a great. The funny part about Jeremiah is so honest. It's amazing. The man will answer your question without any holdback or anything, and I love it. He's just straight up like, they're like, hey, you know, still got another year, you could come to Ohio State. And he's like, yeah, all right, let's
stop wasting
my time. Exactly. And I'm like, that's the real answer. Welcome to the real world.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, if you had said that, it would lead every ESPN article. Jeremiah Smith declares for draft at Media Day. No, now it's like, hey, why are we pretending? You know, why are we understand.
Well,
this
it's
is
weird.
Business.
I agree with you that it has changed, but there was a transitional phase on that with an IL that there was a real option to come back for some guys. Not necessarily for him.
Yes.
But there's a middle ground to, if I can make 2, 3, 4 million, whatever millions by staying, look at what Dante Moore did.
The middle ground, if the guy you're looking for, the perfect middle ground is Cade McDonald. He was what the modern day middle ground of NIL is. Things trended, you know, it was probably 50-50, maybe even 60-40 for him to come back. And then the draft grades got so good that it just, he had to go. And obviously it didn't, he kind of got sold a bill of goods, goes in the second round. He's still going to be a great player, but that is the modern player. But these quarterbacks, I just don't, if they've proved themselves, I don't see a world where they continue or star receivers or running backs to come back to school. It just doesn't make sense.
When you were talking to Julian and saw him roaming the grounds of what, the Hilton up there in Chicago the last few days, did you notice anything different as far as his appearance? Did he look stronger? Did you see the look in his eye that Coach Day saw? Talk about the physical presence of Julian Sand, because as you
and
know,
you measure him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a little bit of the swagger. I don't think you can ask that on radio, by the way. He's got a little bit of the swagger that okay. You've been looking for. I think if Julian goes on the road and balls out against Texas, it's going to give him that final check mark, that the confidence that you need to lead a team. And I understand that Will Howard walked in here with a swagger that's unmatched. Mm-hmm. But he also walked in here and kind of earned the, you could see where, okay, this guy's got it.
He played a lot of football.
Yes, and so I think we're one Texas win away from Julian Sand walking around this place like, okay, that's the guy, let's ride. Like, that's not like, we know he's the guy, but like, that's the guy that's going to lead this team. That guy's going to New York. He could really win this thing. Let's go.
I'm glad you mentioned Arthur Smith in the offense, because I think that is kind of the wait and see for a Ohio State fan on whether he's going to use all the toys that he has. I'm sure he is. I think what you can look forward to, and what I'm kind of sensing and listening to them talk, is that they're going to put a lot of emphasis on the run game, because that's who he is, mm-hmm. physical. And wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if you could really rely? It takes a good offensive line to do it, a good scheme to do it. But if you could really line up and run the football when it counts, it's only going to make the play action that much more valuable. And take, I know everybody wants, it's saying to Jeremiah all the time, every day, every game, all game, but that running game is going to be big. And when I hear them talk about it, and that's why I've been asking questions about, is this Bo's team? Is he 200 plus carries? Is it a little more of a committee? Is it a combination between he and a couple other guys? What is your sense of that?
I don't think it'll be Bo's team. I think Bo will be the lead back, but I think Isaiah West will have quite the role here, and they will slowly work Legend Bay into this conversation. Jacoby Jackson didn't come here to sit on the bench. He came here to play a role for this team. They like him a lot. I think it could look very similar to what we saw last year with just Bo as the lead guy this time around.
What?
This is the most football talk we've ever done.
It's that time of year.
You're welcome.
It's that time of year.
We've made
it to
camp
week. They paid you to do, to go to Chicago and
that's
do
correct.
Some of that.
That's right. So it can't be stupid.
What else did you do on the clock that you got away with? That they paid you to
we
do?
We sight saw. Okay. Nicole had never been to Chicago. This was her first time. So we went out to like the, what do they call that thing?
The Bean?
The observatory. We did go to the Bean. She got her obligatory selfie with the Bean. We went to a lot of different places.
Would you have gone up in the, what you're talking about, Willis Tower to go out on the in the glass box?
You know, I think that stuff is so cool. I would do it.
You couldn't pay me to do it.
Here's the thing. No. I have this theory.
You know what it is, Maddie? It's a sky deck, 103 stories in the air. It's a box that's built that goes outside the building, and you're basically standing.
And you're like, some people like lay over it.
Do the whole Titanic thing?
I did it.
Well, no, that's crazy. I think the 360 platform is different. I think the lean over, is that the same as the box?
So I did the lean over in, what's the thing in Seattle? What's it called?
The Space Needle?
The Space Needle. Did the lean over. Here's the thing. If the glass breaks, my family's got a great lawsuit. They're set for life. All right?
How long would it take you to go splat, you think? What's that time feel like?
It feels like you're trying to ask my weight. And yes, I've had a little extra to eat.
Is that 10-12 seconds that feels like a lifetime, or is it the opposite? A lifetime that feels like 10 seconds.
About 4 seconds, you're scared. 5 seconds, you're like, hey, it's kind of cool. Flying through the air. Mm-hmm. And for about three seconds, You're screaming.
Oh, look, a man is flying. Oh, a man is flying.
You know, a lot of people down here are saying you don't have. Never mind.
You brought up the city of Seattle, so it's only right that we do this.
Oh, you knew what I was going for.
As soon as you brought up Seattle, I saw him slide over to the board, and I knew he had that on deck. You not being able to catch that piece of salmon out there in Seattle.
Sounded like somebody's water breaking or something.
Well, yeah, we're really a year away from that having no context.
The lady screaming, it sounds like she witnessed a murder.
She did. She did that. And you know the crazy part, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this.
What, that Dave Holmes caught it and you didn't?
Yeah, that's right. That the fish.
I have no idea if he did or not.
The fish hit the ground, and then the guy just like picked the fish up and just put it back on the ice.
Didn't,
like,
didn't rinse it or
no,
nothing.
No, there was no washing that fish off. So make sure if you buy a fish in the Pike Place Sea Market, whatever you call it, get yourself a nice little sponge and wipe that thing off.
Okay. All right, so you had a good time though.
It did, but Chicago was fun.
Yeah,
it was a good time. I still wish they would do it at Lucas Oil Stadium. I wish they would do it in a football stadium. For those that don't understand, if you've ever been to a hotel ballroom, that's what it's in. And it's not enough room, and it's hallways, and it's just... Vegas and Chicago just were not it for the media day experience.
You sticking around for the next segment?
Yeah.
I got a question to ask you about something a Big Ten coach said last week.
All right.
It caught a lot of headlines.
Rothman and I...
Today.
Fan has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Cosby Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Hey, this is Michael Behrens, Big Red, otherwise known as the Czar of the Parking Lot, and you're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
Adam King, 10 TV in the house, fresh off his trip to Chi-Town, sauntering around the Art Institute or whatever else he did there.
Hey, are you a movie theater guy?
I don't go very often. Why?
I don't know. You just don't seem... You seem like the kind of guy that if I said, you've got to go see this movie, you would say, well, it'll be on demand in 3 months.
No. I'm looking for reasons to go.
Really?
I want to go to I play Rocky.
What was the last movie you saw in theaters?
Went with your nephew, didn't you?
I saw Disclosure Day.
Was it good?
No. In fact, I thought it was heavily overrated, and I made him, when we got home, say, you want to see a movie? Let's watch War of the Worlds. It was 25 years ago and was better than this one. I think
Tom Cruise War of the Worlds.
Yeah, I think Spielberg actually underwhelmed himself.
I think
I'm not saying you wouldn't be like, there's some engagement to the movie, clearly. It's not a total dud. It was very stereotypical and it got a little corny for me. Mm. But like I told Maddie, I was probably fell asleep in the first 20 minutes anyway. But that's the last one to answer your question. But I made him watch War of the Worlds that weekend. And like I said, that's another Spielberg, and it was 25 years ago, and I thought it was a better movie than Disclosure Day.
War of the Worlds kind of freaked me out when it happened. It was kind of a scary movie. I don't do scary movies.
I can't do them.
You scary movie guy?
I can't even watch scary movie trailers.
Yeah, I'm weirdly drawn to them, but I don't like the gore. Like, I don't need to see the Hostel series. Like, I saw the first one, and I'm out. Okay. Like, I don't need that.
That's fair.
But suspenseful scary movies I do like.
I could go for those.
But like, not the gore.
Yeah.
I'm the thriller stuff.
But I don't like ones that, I also don't like ones that are real, like Killer Clowns. Like that's an, it, yeah, like I'm out on that.
I'll watch the zombie movies though, which is weird.
That's not real.
That's right. That's what I told Maddie, right. I already know they're dead.
There's a movie that we saw a trailer for at the Odyssey. It was called Ice Cream Truck. And I don't condone this movie, but I've got to tell you, it was the most scared I've ever been of a movie trailer. I mean, the trailer was a minute and a half. Maybe Ice Cream Man, something like that. Viewer discretion is advised. And it was like these little kids just stabbing and killing the rest of their town.
So this is like Children of the Corn redone as far as an ice cream truck?
And then, so obviously, the movie came out. Yeah. And I saw it on my timeline last night. And somebody said it was the worst movie ever made. And so now I've never been more
Here's the premise. An idyllic suburban town descends into madness when a mysterious ice cream man serves sweet treats that turn children into homicidal maniacs.
Horrifying trailer. Horrifying. Viewer discretion is advised.
I saw Spider-Man yesterday.
What'd you think?
Really, really good.
Okay.
Telling AR Tom Holland's cooking right now, going from the Odyssey to Spider-Man is elite. Elite stuff.
I saw that it's done almost $1 billion in the opening weekend. That doesn't make any... How is that even possible?
Unreal.
Globally.
That's just insane
it's
to me.
Marvel Universe, man. People love it. People are obsessed with it.
Aren't we all a little... Like, I like Spider-Man. I like Spider-Man, and I'll watch the Avengers, like, when they all get together and hang out. But, like, aren't we just tired of all of these? They got more Marvel characters than I've ever heard in my life. They got, like... Who's the girl that's in... she's the blonde... She's in the movie. She's like a star nowadays.
Florence Pugh.
Florence Pugh. See, we got
her. She's in Thunderbolts.
What is like? When did she join the new Avengers? I saw her in the trailer for
Florence
the Avengers.
Florence
Henderson. Okay. And I was like, when did you join this universe?
There's another Avengers coming out this year, so buckle up, by the way, and it's going to be really, really good. Here's the question I wanted to ask you real quick, since you are at Big Ten Media Days. No, all good. I just want to make sure we get this in before you leave. When Kyle Whittingham went down the road of...
He's never leaving. He won't leave.
I'll be here next segment, too, and the one after that.
When he was leaning into, hey, I don't want this to be about hatred from our side when it comes to the game and the rivalry, what was your reaction to that?
My reaction was, welcome back to the Rich Rod, Brady Hoke era of Michigan. It just very much gave me the, like, boy, this guy doesn't get it, and he could try to get it, but it's going to take some time for him to get it. And that is just not, go the other way.
Let me ask you this, though. We talked about this with Tress. Wasn't in Tress's personality to throw that stuff out there, like the hate and the, like, he knew it was intense. He knew what they had to do. He knew the process. He did throw out the 310 days.
I was going to say, Tress has one of the most iconic lines in the entire thing.
It is, but it was, you'll be proud of them. It wasn't a guarantee of win. It wasn't a...
Yeah, but it was.
They're the mortal enemy. Like, it wasn't that.
I think
that.
It's a very nice way of guaranteeing something.
I think you're going to be proud of them. If I had to know the intricacies of what's going on up in the big house, and this is just my gut. I don't have anything behind this. It feels like there was a message sent. Like, you have to stop the anger in this rivalry. It's gone too far. Michigan waiting on the M. What happened, obviously, at the shoe 2 years ago. Like, it feels like the directive given to Whittingham is like, this is a rivalry game, but we cannot have it ever get out of control again. So he's trying to play traffic cop, when in reality, it's not.
I don't read it that way. I don't read that he's trying to take pressure off to start.
I think he put so much pressure on. I don't think there was. I mean,
if you call it the most intense, heated, most important game in the entire free world. You don't think that, like, I think if he would have gone all in.
Call a spade, it's what it is. It doesn't change it because he says we don't want to.
He said it can be an intense and emotional without the hatred. I don't know. You'd have to go deeper into what that meant.
He's trying to lean back on the Bo Woody. We respect them so much that we hate them, but we don't hate them. We love them and we hope.
The rivalry's in the winning. That's what I got out of it.
I think that. Every Michigan fan and how would you feel as a Buckeye coach? Would you rather, I'll give you A or B. A new Ohio State head coach is introduced. One, he walks to the mic and he says, we want to win that game, but, you know, we don't hate that team. You know, it's a good rivalry, but we're not. Or the other, he walks up and he says, every day we're working to beat that team. We can't stand that team. That team is not going to be in our way at any point. I don't care if it's founded on hate, anger, whatever. We're going to win. I guarantee you 98% of Buckeye fans are taking the second option. They don't want
that.
This is football. This is the greatest rivalry in all of sport. Quit holding the hands and singing Kumbaya.
So you think he diluted it by saying that? Okay.
Come on.
We'll know when we know.
He doesn't know the rivalry, though. He'll figure it out once his job's called for after they lose this year.
He actually said the words, make no mistake. I know what the implications are. Like, he acknowledged.
Yeah, but this is a guy that thinks that when Utah and BYU get together, it's the most intense rivalry of all time. Like, he doesn't have that ability to see what he hasn't seen yet. Unless you're in the thick of it, you don't know.
Speaking of things you haven't seen, have you been to the BYU-Utah rivalry?
I've watched it every, I watched it on TV.
Well,
it's always a good game. It's typically like two top 15 games.
A lie.
What, have you been to the BYU Utah? Are you hanging out in?
No.
Okay.
But it's very much like Carolina Duke. They're so close to each other. There's a little.
You can't put Utah BYU in this.
No, of course.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a holy war.
I understand. It is not. I would argue that the Utah Oregon game is bigger than the Utah BYU game because it actually has national merit every year.
I think it was a miss by him.
It was a swing and a major miss.
It was a miss by him. I don't think it's going to have any effect on how tough his team is, how hard they play. But I do think there is something to being able to win certain moments as a new head coach, and that was opportunity for him to win over maybe some of the fans that aren't on board with him. And I think some people that may have been on the fence may say, well, what was that?
If you go overboard, you can always dial it back. If you go underboard, it's hard to say, well, yeah, I actually think it is important.
So, Matt, if it's not going to affect the game in any way, though, then what does it really matter?
It does affect the game. It does affect the game.
How?
Because I want, on that opening kickoff, Kyle Whittingham to look across and go, I hate that guy. Because that's what everybody in the stand is doing.
All these coaches talk before the game. Didn't Urban talk to Harb? Didn't Ryan talk to Jim?
Yes,
they meet before the game.
It is.
I'm not saying they're talking about football, but it's not like get away from me.
It is a rivalry founded on.
Then why are these coaches talking before the game like they're old buddies?
But they're not. They don't like each other.
It's a fraternity.
That's so great.
I think it could be an act, some of it too.
Yes, no, no.
Like checking the box of what I'm supposed to do.
But if you hate them so much, like you can't have both. You can't say how much I hate them and then act buddy-buddy with them before the game.
It's required.
You know where I'm at with handshakes in sports. I think all of them need to be done. We don't need to be a handshake.
You cannot. The idea. There is no doubt in my mind, whether it be Urban, Ryan, Luke, I'm sorry, you only had 1 year. Like, Tress maybe is the only one that I can't, like, they hate that other team. They respect them, but they hate them. And that's what the rivalry is. And we've played this, like, weird game, like, well, we all need to, you know, be nice and be.
Yeah,
that's
like
out
that.
The window.
I don't like that.
It's gone.
Okay.
It's a rivalry built
but
on
I
hate.
Just think there's all sorts of levels. Matty and I discussed last, because you don't think bulletin board material matters.
No,
so then why would this matter?
I don't think bulletin board.
Then why does this matter then?
Bulletin board material doesn't show itself at all on the field.
Well, then why would this matter then?
You don't think?
I am agreeing with you that I don't think it's going to matter come that game. I just think you have to do things as a coach.
I don't think what he said matters. I think that's how he really.
It's what he didn't say.
I think if that's how he feels, it's going to matter come the last Saturday in November. Because you got to have that anger. You got to have everything leading to that game.
All I want, I guess, you're right. We'll know when we know.
We'll know
when
we know.
And maybe he isn't built for the rivalry.
Welcome back, Rich Rodriguez.
We don't know that yet. We don't know that yet.
Welcome
back. If he's built for the rivalry.
Brady Hoke.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting if his personality, because I did applaud him last week for being at least genuine to himself. They didn't manufacture or fake it.
Well, yeah,
but if it doesn't work, then
he's not a Michigan man. Like, it's not burned into his mind every day. So, you can't.
But you just don't.
You don't know until you know.
You don't undersell one of the most important things to that program.
I think if it happened at Duke, North Carolina, they would fire the coach already.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
You should have asked him. I'd say, listen, you flunked the test. You're out.
You're out. See you next year.
All right. Good to see you, man.
Hey, this was a pleasure. Best part of
where are you flying off to this week? Anywhere?
I'm going to go over to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and watch some football. Welcome back. We made it through that long offseason.
We're here.
We're here.
Thanks,
get it, gentlemen.
Talk to you soon. That's our friend Adam King of 10TV, who has an open before we got our open. That should make you feel pretty strong. Deep dive coming up next. The Dodgers are playing the game just better than most. Rothman
Grove City.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. 4 hours remain before the MLB trade deadline. The Guardians sent catching prospect Jacob Cozart to the Angels for outfielder Joe Adell, who now leads the club with 16 homers, 62 RBIs, and 101 hits. To make room for him, Cleveland DFA'd infielder Juan Brito. Over an hour ago, ESPN's Buster Olney reported the Red Sox have an arrangement to acquire All-Star catcher Adley Rutschman from the Orioles. Boston just needs to say yes or no. In the last hour, Orioles also traded outfielder Taylor Ward of the Mariners. The Rays acquired Marlins catcher Liam Hicks, and the White Sox landed two-time Gold Glover Brenton Doyle from the Rockies. College football, Ohio State quarterback Julian Sain, wideout Jeremiah Smith, and running back Bo Jackson were named to the Maxwell Award preseason watch list. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from my interest rates with Special rates on balance transfers at BMI Federal Credit Union, BMIFCU.org/Visa.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at orthopedicone.com.
All right, final hour of the program. We'll get into more of Jimmy Haslam comments, bottom of the hour, about the quarterback situation this year, what he thinks is going to happen. But the big story of the weekend was Tarek Skubal going to the Dodgers. And they've won the last two World Series. And they've got, I don't have their payroll in front of me, but that's got to be one of, if not the highest payroll in baseball. So now, I'm willing to say that they're playing by the current rules. So I'm not going to tell you that it's unfair. I do say that I think that baseball is doing themselves a disservice. I'm not in the camp of, well, if we're talking about them, that means it's a win. I've never been in that camp. You know, what's the line I'm looking for? Any publicity is good publicity. I'm not. That's fine. You want to live by that in your life where, you know, the second they mention your brand, that there's a negative connotation, first, second, and third, that's somehow a win.
As long as I'm being talked about, the mindset for some.
I don't believe in that. I think it's stupid, but that's just me. I'm not talking about in that vein anyway. The Dodgers know that now they've always had a target because of the market they are and the team they are and the history they have. And I'm giving them that. I am. So I wanted to be very clear at first and say this is fair. Like, there are teams that could have outbid them. They didn't. Now, maybe they don't have the prospect package the Dodgers had. So give credit to the Dodgers for that. Mm-hmm. That they can pull off a trade like this and flip out some minor leaguers and we'll see. They can flip out a guy as good as Zahir Hope. A 21-year-old outfielder who's a top 25 prospect. Like, that's a guy you'd love to have. But the Dodgers were the first repeat champion in 25 years. So I'm not telling you that baseball is broken, but I cannot love it. I cannot love where baseball is going. And I do believe that this league needs a salary cap, a hard cap, and a hard floor. What I mean is the nothing teams don't get out of this free. They've got to spend. Like, under what I would think in 2027, if you set a hard limit on how much a team could spend, then a minimum of what each team has to spend, then I think you're okay. Like, I don't want to live in a world where teams can exceed the cap.
Like, the frustration, I think, for some, too, is how the contracts have been structured out there in L.A., right, with all the deferred payments. Just all the money that they are going to have to pay, but it's way down the line. Shohei is helping them do some of these things. So if you guys want to be frustrated with anybody, be frustrated with the best player in the world in Shohei, because he's allowing them to have some of this flexibility. But I'm glad you highlighted what this specific situation is. This isn't, hey, our bank account is bigger than everybody else's, we're just going to go buy Skubal. This is in time, them putting in the work, whether it's other trades or their own work of, we have an elite farm system. Mm-hmm. So when we have these opportunities, we're going to do it.
Because he's a rental.
No question, right? And so All these other teams that were in the mix had an opportunity to get this thing done. The Dodgers sat back and said, the Tigers sat back and said, what the Dodgers are offering is just better than all these other teams. And then you just brought up the other angle. There's no guarantee that he's going to be a Dodger for the foreseeable future. Nope. I think there's a strong percentage of that, because when you're an elite player like Skubal around other elite players, and all the other reports of how the Dodgers take care of their players, how they have a plane specifically for the players to where after their game, they don't have to wait on trainers or anybody else. The players are gone and they can get to the next city an hour before, 2 hours before, whatever it is. So they lean into taking care of their own, and that's going to be really appealing for him. The other reason why I'm not going to be crying too much about this is because there was a lot of chatter last year about, well, the Dodgers are going to win it all, and we had one of the best Game 7s and best World Series we've seen from the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're talking, we're an out away, a couple pitches away from this dynamic, I think, feeling a little bit different. There's no denying they've been stacking the deck, but they have the resources to do that. Their TV deal, the way their ownership group is structured, all of that is in their favor. But this one with Scooble isn't the rich getting richer just because they are rich.
That's right.
It's the rich getting richer because they were smart in how they've done business in the past.
Cleveland Guardians have a payroll of about $75 million. The LA Dodgers have a payroll of about $300 plus. I don't like that. Well, you can put it on the owners, you can put it on whatever, but if you put a hard cap in on this thing and a required floor, I think you'd have a system. And I think you'd have a system where the bottom half market teams, the fans of those teams, could go in thinking, we got a shot.
Let me ask you this. If the Blue Jays would have won the World Series last year, would you be feeling this way?
Maybe. Probably not completely. Yeah. It was that close. Mm-hmm. We haven't had I don't think we've had a three-peat in...
I think since the 70s or something.
I don't even
like
think
that.
A National League team's never done it, I don't think. At least as far as I know.
Yankees 98 through A's? 2000 or something like that?
Yeah, so... It's
That's
new,
what I'm saying.
It's new and it's cool for a lot of people, but and here's my ammunition on it. Over the last, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, a bottom 15 market, we've had one winner. We've had Kansas City in 2015. And feels like in other sports this happens a lot more. NHL, it happens a lot more. Like I like when fans in several markets believe that their team can be competitive year in and year out. It does take good ownership. It does take good scouting.
Yeah, that's the
not
other
a perfect system.
Like let's not bail out owners for not investing either.
Well, like that's why I want a floor.
That's the other part of this too, is that even without this stuff that you're highlighting, they can still go out and be more aggressive financially. And some of these owners are just sitting back and not choosing to do so. And I know there's some Guardian fans listening to this and probably thinking the same thing. Like, they've had teams that are playoff contenders, division winners, and they're just been a piece or two away, and ownership hasn't financially gone in the way that I think they should, and probably some of their fans as well. So I don't want to just give the owners a get out of jail free card with this salary cap stuff, even though I think that's definitely on the table, because one team, I think, is being smart with their resources.
No, that's why I'm an advocate for not just a cap, but a floor. That you can't get away with not spending.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, under league, like if you set a hard limit on how much a team could spend, let's say you'd set it at $250 million, and then I would set the floor at $175. So now, if you own a baseball team, you have to spend.
Step up.
And you have to, and if you're dumb still, then you're going to get crushed. But at least the disparity would be a lot closer. Like, if I said that no baseball team could exceed the cap, all 30 clubs required to comply with the floor, all of a sudden now you'd have something. Like, and I think that's where this should go. Then I don't know if it could or whether it will, but the cap would require a lot of clubs to reduce their payroll.
And I guess
probably 8 to 10 would have to cut about $500 million off their payroll.
My mind goes to, how much parity would that bring into the sport even then? Because the teams that do have to spend that amount of money, would those players that you're offering want to go there? Versus some of the teams that would still have, obviously, the money to offer these guys that are in bigger markets, on better teams, whatever it is. So the effort would be there from some of those teams that you're talking about. I just don't know if that's going to automatically equate to more parity. I don't think it will.
It's not a guarantee.
Yeah.
You're right. It's not a science, but it would bring it a lot closer. And there have been a combined 20 champions from bottom half markets since 2012. 5 in the NFL, 7 in the NBA, 8 in the NHL, and 1 in Major League Baseball. I guess that's my stat of the day.
So you think this is bad for the game?
I think the game could be better. I think you'd have more competitive, more parity, more chances, more markets getting a taste of it. But you'd have to require them to spend. I'm not letting them off the hook. I'm not trying to bring the rich back to them. I'm trying to bring the rich closer and then them have to come up and spend money to make the disparity a lot less than it is right now.
Okay. I'm not sitting here with this overwhelming feeling that this is the worst thing that's happened, because I still think that the Dodgers, with Scooble and the crew that they have, this isn't some, hey, you're automatically handed this thing. I don't view it that way. They're no doubt the favorite.
That's why I made it very clear in the beginning. This was a trade.
Right. Yeah, after what I witnessed last year, I don't think this is a guarantee.
All right, we're going to come back and Ty Monken talking about his quarterback pecking order, and maybe one guy will get his shot. You'll hear it next. Rothman.
Transportation.
Think you know Buckeye football? These two say, hold my beer. The Beat with Austin and Berg.
Sponsored by the Waterworks.
Daily on the Fan's YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Hey there, happy Monday. Lots of sunshine for the remainder of the day. Highs right around 82 degrees, but come overnight tonight, lows in the 60s. It's going to feel quite nice tomorrow morning with lower humidity to start off your Tuesday morning. Highs tomorrow, lots of sunshine, right around 86 degrees. I'm your 10 Weather Impact meteorologist, Lily Aldridge, 97.1 The Fan.
The Big Nine was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, so Maddie, you know that I was all over this last year. I really wanted to know from the Browns and Andrew Berry, like, you drafted Dylan Gabriel before Shedeur. So clearly you thought more of him in the draft process. A lot more. Two rounds more, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's... And then when you saw that Shedeur was still there, you thought, all right, there's value now. I'm going to actually praise him for that part. Value guy...
Who are you giving praise to? Because I'm still...
I'm giving Berry some praise for seeing some value in saying, all right, just because I drafted Dylan doesn't mean what I want...
See, that's
that I couldn't have Shedeur. But what I was saying is that you have to hold him to that he thought Dylan was better than Shedeur. They were both available at the time. He chose Gabriel.
I'm going to go to my grave believing that that wasn't an Andrew Berry call.
The Shedeur pick.
Yes.
Yeah, that was Haslam pick.
Because I guess it doesn't make much... football sense to me when it comes to roster construction to do that as a GM.
Like you already proved that you like the other guy a lot better.
Correct. And so I'm always going to think that was a call from old Jimmy. Don't need to get too carried away with it, but it was just, it's something you rarely see teams do, is double dip in the same draft at that position.
Well, I guess the defense would be that I drafted Dylan, he was third round, correct?
Yeah.
That I drafted Dylan in the third round. It's not like he was a first rounder and then I grabbed another quarterback later.
It just puts
he could always say that, hey, there's no guarantee my third round quarterback's going to make it, and I'm going to volume shoot a little bit, and Shedeur, there was value. The other thing with Shedeur is he was slated to be, unlike Dylan, a first round pick.
Yeah, in the minds of some, that definitely was out there. I just think as a GM, that puts your head coach in a very tough spot. Right? Managing that on top of already having Flacco, on top of already having Kenny Pickett at the time, I just thought it was odd, and obviously it didn't work out. And so now here we are turning the page, and two of those guys are still here. Now you're adding a third with Deshaun into this mix, and I don't really think Dylan's factoring in.
Here's the day two of Browns training camp, the observations from ESPN. Daniel Oyafusi. Slow start for the number one offense. Shedeur got into a rhythm late. Deshaun bounced back after the two interception day, much sharper. O-line still working through things as expected. Some procedural penalties, issues versus pressure. All right. My gut tells me that they are going to move on from Gabriel. I don't know how you do it before the season and try to get something for him. I don't know who would be that team, because I don't really know what Gabriel could offer somebody else.
Hope.
Cutting him is the easy move. Like, he's a...
I'm with you. What is that return AR?
Oh, it's low.
Sixth round pick?
It's low. They'd be lucky to get a day three pick.
And
lucky.
Here's the other thing. He doesn't really have any, like, truly elite traits for somebody to buy into, right? Like, so right now, if I were a team that were on the hunt for a quarterback of the future, and you offered me on one side of this Anthony Richardson or Dylan Gabriel, I'm going to bet on Anthony Richardson. It's not a lottery ticket I love, but just because of the traits. So for Dylan, short guy, doesn't have a strong arm, doesn't have great athleticism. I just don't know what would be appealing right now, because connected to the things that I listed that could be negative traits in the mind of an owner or GM is doesn't have film either to rely on.
So he was a little bit of a dual threat guy, right? There was some appeal there coming out. And the other part of this makes me believe that we can't let the Stefanski factor out of this.
Yeah, they did.
That maybe he weighed in and said, I need him in my QB room.
Maybe.
Like, I don't want to put it all on Barry, and then I know we put the Shador on Haslam, but maybe what drove this train was Stefanski.
Stefanski.
I could see those two being on the same page for the Dylan Gabriel pick. It still doesn't add up to me, the Shador part of it, but Stefanski.
If you didn't want Shador in the third round,
why did you want him,
want him in the fifth? Because presumably you took the guy you wanted.
Correct.
So I say all that to get to this. Todd Monken shared his thoughts on Gabriel, and my guess is that they need to go Glazapalooza here to see if...
up his stock a little bit?
A little.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
At some point, when you start in the spring, or some point in the spring and the fall, you have to have set some form of a depth chart in terms of reps. That's just the way it goes. And I said it the other day, the player, everybody's competing, but you're not guaranteed the same amount of reps. So it's up to the player to take advantage and maximize those reps, which I feel like Dylan has done. So we see as we move forward, if that continues, we'll continue to up his reps. I mean, he's earned that. That's what every player should expect, right? If they play well, you have to up their reps, or what's the purpose of playing well?
Here's, I think, a little bit of the reality, too, for Dylan. Is obviously they knew they had him on the roster, and they still brought in another young quarterback. I know it was a sixth-round pick.
Talen?
Yeah. If this was a, hey, we're going to bring in an OG, and you could clearly see that guy is going to be the vet, safety net to Deshaun, Shador, whoever's going to be the starter, that is, to me, I think, a little bit of a red flag for him, is that they're putting another quarterback in a room, one in that room, in a similar timeline. And Talen Green, I think, is their project of the tools, the upside, and they want to invest in that. So I think you're right in thinking that either he's going to get cut or they're going to try to trade him, and they're going to roll with Deshaun, Shador, and Talen Green as their quarterback.
Yeah, I think that'd be fine. They're polar opposites, right? One's 6'6".
And they added another righty quarterback to this room. So you got three righty quarterbacks in the room and one lefty now as well. And so when Dylan Gabriel hops in there and gets the reps, he can kind of flip things and make things a little odd. Now it can be a seamless transition in practice with flow when you have all right-handed quarterbacks versus one lefty hopping in there.
So he's a scout team quarterback.
Kind of feels like that's where this is headed, man.
Yeah. It has that feeling to me that if he's going to be gone. I don't know how they could cut anybody else and you're not carrying four.
Yeah.
So he'll be gone. Now, whether they get anything for him is yet to be seen, but there's a little part of this by doing right by him.
TLC, do me a favor.
He was a Stefanski pick, though, in my mind, because he's a ball control guy. He's a short, get it out.
Quick, efficient.
Yeah, honestly, the more I think about it, Dylan was Stefanski's guy.
That makes sense, AR, because remember what we heard Stefanski saying about Jameis.
Yeah.
Is that, the turnovers, it was just tough. Right? He wanted, I think, a guy, to your point.
Yeah.
Played a lot in college.
Could take off a little bit.
Maybe not the most elite guy, but good enough.
Very good in college.
Right. I'm talking traits in the NFL level to where I don't need him to be that, though. Right. So I think you might be onto something. Can you look up the 25 draft, TLC, in the third round? Let's play the who could the Browns have had outside of Dylan game? Because I'm curious if there's anybody that went after him that were like, ooh, if they would have scooped him up instead of using that third-round pick
on
Dylan.
As far as a quarterback or anybody?
Anybody that jumps out to you guys when you're rolling through the picks maybe after Dylan Gabriel. Is there anybody that jumps out to you guys that could have been the, ooh, they would have had him instead?
We can go.
I would have liked the kid from, who was the kid that was lighting the world on fire with the kick returns from Tennessee?
Shamari DK.
Yeah, I like him.
Okay. Yeah, he would have been shortly after.
But that's totally different.
Uh-oh.
So I want to have fun. People call me brain dead, but IDGAF, Cam Scataboo.
Oh. Well,
yeah, the
Quinshon was the drafted where?
That
second round, but they did get Dylan Sampson later.
Yeah.
So they were open-minded.
Dylan was picked 94, Maddie.
Okay, and I still think Dylan's going to be a factor in the offense and help him out. So
Xavier Watts would have been a good option if you needed a safety.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a couple guys maybe. But it there's no doubt, right, AR? It's a wasted pick now, and I think it's always going to be a wasted pick for them because I don't think he's going to be doing much on Sunday.
It probably is going to turn out to be a wasted pick, but in their minds, they rescued it by grabbing Shador in the fifth.
And so, if Shador's their guy,
it's kind of like going to the line, two to make one, especially at that position. All right, you'll hear from Jimmy Haslam in 2 minutes, and he's very well aware of what the predictions are for his team this season. You'll hear it next, Rothman.org.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Miss a minute of Rothman and Ice? Check out the podcast.
Type in Rothman and Ice wherever you get your podcasts. Download and subscribe.
Back to Rothman and Ice.
Maddie, if you gave me an out on the bet I made with Adam King on that the Browns would win six or more, if you gave me the out,
okay,
I wouldn't take it.
So you're staying 10 toes down?
I don't know. Maybe six. That's possible. Okay. I feel like I want to see this through. Like, there's no real reason to bail. It's not an absurd number to ask for.
Okay.
It's not absurd. It's right on where Las Vegas has it anyway. So it's not like I made a bad bet or go. No, I made it before the Myles Garrett trade. That's the problem with it, because I think he alone, even though he truly doesn't translate, I can't tell you because he hasn't really led to that many wins. But I think with this schedule, if he had a killer day, it might. It might equal one, like if he was still there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have a hard time now looking at their schedule and saying that they'd automatically get to six. I just thought they're going to be a little better than the whole new coach thing and all that, and whether or not they will lean into, hey, it's okay if we don't win a lot. Like, I'm up against it. I get it. But I'm gonna see it through. I think it's going to be a fun little race to try to see if I can get them to six. If I can get them to three before the bye, then I could come out of the bye and beat Vegas and Atlanta and Indy and have it. And then I got it. Like, I think if I get three on each side of the bye, I win the bet. We get to six. Six is the number, and I'm good to go.
And the bet is, again, what, dinner, round of golf, putter? What is it again?
Something.
What did they bet on TLC?
I'd have to spend a certain amount of time with him.
Oh. He's got two bets.
There might be a meal involved.
One's dinner.
Yeah. I think it's the dinner bet was this one.
Okay, the dinner bet was this one. And so TLC played some sound earlier from J.W. Johnson about his expectation, and this isn't, hey, we're punting, or this is a rebuilding year for us. They have expectations in their minds up there. But Jimmy was also a part of this as well, and he's looking at that schedule feeling pretty good.
I would say this, and we never do this, but I think the odds are for us to win 5.5 games. I'll take the over.
Take the over.
Here's what he doesn't understand, and this is why he shouldn't have said this. Winning more than 5.5 doesn't make you great. Like, if it's an over saying, hey, we heard our over-under was 9.5, I'll take the over. All right, that you can say. But he acted like that was some sort of an odd flex.
I just love the...
I'll take the over. You know what the follow-up is? How much over?
I always love the acknowledgement of things that owners, athletes, and coaches tell us they don't acknowledge. Like, he's looking at overs and unders as an owner. Where's our over?
At least when I asked Don Waddell that, he said, I've not heard. What is it?
I love
it. At least he asked me what it was. He knows.
What did we play? The clip from Ben Johnson on Friday where he was...
Johnson?
We're the number one regression team in the sport.
According to ESPN. Did he say according to ESPN?
No, I think he said
it was scrolling through the pictures, and
which that's not even true.
There's so many pictures of Jacksonville.
That was Liam Cohen talking about Caleb Williams. Ben Johnson heard that and was like, I don't know what he's talking about. We've been picked as the number one regression team. And then you got an owner saying, you know, I heard we got an over under 5.5. I'll take the over.
But when he said I'll take the over, does he realize that winning six only accomplishes one thing? Me winning my bet. Other than that, it's nothing.
And it probably takes you out
of... Maybe a lot of other Browns fans. I don't know.
It's follow-up galore. Because to J.W. Johnson earlier today, when he
J.
was like
W's Johnson.
He's like, oh, everyone thinks that we're just punting on this year for this draft in 2027. We're trying to win now. The easy follow-up is, then why'd you just trade your best player?
Well, it was complicated. That's how I would answer that question. Because without violating trust with Myles Garrett and not wanting to insult him on the way out and make it all about, well, he wanted out and there was nothing we could, you know, like, we were going
to
force him to stay.
Contract.
No, I understand that, but he was clearly, they used it as an opportunity. And I don't necessarily think that it's horrible to think the way they're thinking, that Miles is going to turn 31. He hasn't led to wins. While we didn't love this trade, we saw it as an opportunity to build something. And so I think we can all wrap our mind a little around that. But I just think Haslam talking about, like, gimme the over, like that's some news-breaking thing. Like, his number's so low.
To me,
bring the flex on the over on 5.5 is odd.
What makes it news-breaking is an owner doing that. It is odd to your point, but an owner talking about overs and unders and saying I'm going to take the over or the under is wild. But I'm here for it, and it's entertaining. Here's where I think you, to get to six wins, the window that's going to be really important for you. I think it's the Carolina-Pittsburgh Jets window. Mm-hmm. That's got to be 2-1.
Yep.
In that.
I agree.
And for Carolina right now.
Wow, you're talking about two playoff teams from last year in there.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
Two of them are in Cleveland.
Hear me out. Your team, Carolina, your NFC team. They are beat up. What's that going to look like in week three? They've lost one of their best defenders for the year. And in that Jets game on the road, they can get that. I understand you heard the Steelers pop it up in there. You wanted to ride for your guys.
No,
I'm talking
saying,
more about Carolina and the Jets, not you guys.
Okay. Well,
Benny and the Jets.
Two of those teams made the playoffs last year, so that means they have to steal a win from a former playoff team.
I think Carolina's you got to go check out their injury stuff, man. They're down bad.
Who are they?
They got it bad.
They're down bad.
You're asking me to know injury stuff and the season hasn't started
this
yet?
This is your NFC team. You got an AFC team. These are your guys.
Talking about marketing and sales when I haven't even given you the product yet. Just bring the damn thing over to my house
tonight.
Who's
going to be my NFC team this year?
Oh, you're getting a new one?
Yeah, probably recycle a new one each
okay,
year.
I just thought you could ride with Carolina building
off. Wanted Bryce Young to be good, yeah, and I feel like I got that.
Okay.
So now I don't.
Yeah, you got to adopt it. I'm going to do that with you this year. AR, you should adopt an AFC team. Well, yours is the Bills, so we already know.
You know what?
Oh, an AFC team?
That's your adopted AFC team, right? The
100%.
Bills? Okay.
Can I adopt Washington this year?
I would adopt the Raiders for gear.
Yeah. Okay. You just want to remain. You just, you know, the guy that loves
Raiders and Vikings, big Latavius Murray guy.
I would adopt for gear and the colors, give me the Raiders. For a little bit of uni and team, give me the Chargers.
Okay.
And if I'm going all like sympathetic, like get them one time, it would be Buffalo.
It's Buffalo.
Okay. Yeah.
So Buffalo's pulling at your heartstrings is what you're saying. Their story pulls at your heartstrings.
It used to.
Just having like one of the best quarterbacks in the league and winning a whole bunch of games and all that stuff.
It's kind of more old school than that. It's more like Marv Levy and Jim Kelly.
It's the Super Bowl run. You want them to check that box.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I certainly didn't love it when they're losing to Dallas and all that, but you're telling me this is an adopted team.
It's fair.
It's not a first love. I would adopt them. If you told me that I couldn't have the Vikes anymore.
Oh, wait a minute.
And I had to trade them for a team in the NFC.
Okay. Detroit?
It's odd that I would probably lean that way.
Staying in the division.
I've kind of been a... That would be too hard to do, though.
Yeah.
So
I think they missed their window.
Oh, you think they're cooked?
Detroit,
I'm worried about
tough division, but
their offense should be elite. I still think their offense will be elite.
Yeah, I think for uni and colors, if I played the same game, I'd probably go Saints.
It's not bad, and I think they're on the rise. I think you're talking about a team that's starting to figure some things out. I think that's a good. I think both you guys made good calls.
Washington's
your NFC team this year?
No. Nope.
You're moving off that.
The chip's on my shoulder, baby.
You're a Baker.
Yep. Tampa, let's go.
You see what he's doing, AR. He wants it to come full circle. He's going to ride with Baker now.
And then
hopefully
when he comes
gets to the
And where did you get that from?
You.
That's right.
It was a great idea.
I learned it from watching you, Dad.
It was a great idea.
Now, get these drugs.
The franchise tag's going to ruin everything there. But
or the transition tag. That'd be cheaper.
Oh, well, if they can do that too, sure. Whichever one works
I
for them.
I love AR's mindset. How much money can we save?
But that, if he's eligible.
I'm hoping he doesn't get tagged, fellas.
But of course not. He wanted to play it out and then pick where he wants to go.
But I'm with you. I think he is. I think we're all on the same page when it comes to that. I would not understand at all them letting him go to free agency, because I don't think they're going to be bad enough either to
get somebody in the next draft. Yeah.
That's why I don't really understand the game that they're playing.
The game they're playing is they don't trust him.
What's not the trust? You have a good quarterback that's going to lead you to the playoffs?
I got it. What am I not understanding? They trust moving forward completely. I don't know. They've got him for this year.
Okay.
Although if he plays great, the price only goes up.
Yeah,
it looks like they're walking. It looks like they're walking him to
a letting franchise him go. Tag
or a tag.
Yeah, I think that's.
But they'd still have to pay him $50 mil.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But maybe they like the pay as you go. 1 year, no big commitment. Not 2-3 years, because they were gonna the 2 year contract. Apparently, they offered him was on top of this year, correct? So yeah. They'd have him for three more this year and two more.
If he was 35 right now, I would understand their hesitation. He's 31. And you don't have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have an answer. It's not like, hey, they drafted a quarterback in the first round 3 years ago and he's been waiting his time and now they want to push Baker out the door for him. Then I'd be like, okay, then you got to see what you got.
They must not view him as a franchise guy. Let's call it for what it is.
That's unbelievable.
They don't. They view him as a very good competitive quarterback in the NFL.
What's the old saying? Beggars can't be choosers, whatever that is. Like, I don't think they're in a situation to be this dug in.
Or they're going the other way, which is that they prefer that they're kind of retooling on the fly.
So you like what they're doing with Baker?
No, I don't love it either way.
Okay.
If I could get him at the right number, I think that's what they tried to do. I think Baker's asking for the world, and they don't want to pay that. You think he's worth $55 million?
Yeah, I do. I do.
I guess it's market value, right? Yeah. He's worth it because of what the market says.
But I also think he's earned it. I think he's earned it. I really do. Down there. And you don't over the last 3 years. Like, I think this should this should have been done.
Second half of last season was scary.
But he was injured. Yeah. He was injured. His guys were injured, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
They lost to Quinn Ewers.
I wasn't a Baker.
Maddie, he had the same beef with Cleveland. I played hurt. I gave my body for you guys. And all you did is throw me in the trash. Like, it seems like this follows him.
It does, but to me, what's followed him to Tampa is team success, too. And I think that's what this is all about, is finding a quarterback and hoping that team success comes along with it.
This year will be very interesting for him.
Yeah.
Because now the pressure's on. He's decided to bet on himself again.
And he told him, I'm not talking anymore about it, so it's done.
All right, we'll come back and tell the truth. Rothman.
PSA.
Buckeye Replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Greg Fry and the Buckeyes are at Iowa in that 1990 thriller.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Tell the truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
All right, TLC, take us home.
Sure thing. So we had some news break during the show that Ohio State, listen to me, 3-2-1, that Notre Dame and USC will be renewing their rivalry, which went temporarily dormant. So that'll be coming back starting in 2030. I think they have a 4-year deal. So I guess it was temporarily gone. Now it's temporarily back. So Notre Dame USC is back. And part of the reason that that rivalry can come back is because Indiana canceled its home and home with Notre Dame. That was going to be in that time frame. So Notre Dame pivoted elsewhere. And so the news kind of broke simultaneously that Notre Dame and USC is back because Notre Dame versus Indiana is gone.
Wonder why Indiana bailed out of that.
You guys looking down at Notre Dame? Why. You guys win one natty over there, you start looking down on people?
Could have had Sean McDonough calling it. It would have been great.
Well, here's perhaps the reason why, because I can let you know all of Indiana's future non-conference opponents that they currently have scheduled.
Not good, are they?
So obviously, the Big Ten plays 9 conference games, so 75% of Indiana's schedule every year is going to be Big Ten games. But here's who we have for potential non-conference games. Well, not potential non-conference games. These are scheduled non-conference games. I will list you all of the opponents that they have moving forward. This will cross between this year all the way through 2032. North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky twice, Kennesaw State, Indiana State twice, UMass, Austin Peay, Eastern Michigan, Miami, Ohio, Ball State, Eastern Illinois, Delaware, and UConn. Those are all of the teams that Indiana will be playing in the non-conference. So clearly, their style is going to be, let's just compile as many wins as we can. And if the playoffs expand, that's going to be great for them. So, you know, why? And I actually agree with this. It's terrible for the sake of television watching. But Indiana is basically saying, hey, if 9-3 is going to be the bar to get into the playoffs, let's just scratch off 33% of those wins as easily as possible.
Off. Hypocritical. He's the one that said the SEC was crying. And here, like, I got to call for what it is. Like, that's not one Power Four conference opponent. Like, it's or one Power Four team. I don't. Listen, here's what you can't argue with. His recipe. His recipe is working. And so, if he feels that before a 9-game tough, rough and tough and tumbled Big Ten season, I don't need to challenge my guys and physically tax them, and then this is the recipe. But I think you can't have that and on the other side just start slinging at other people.
Yeah, I
hear you.
I wonder, I don't know how ironclad these deals are when it comes to these contracts with these opponents and all of that. I have to imagine there's going to be some other opportunities for Indiana to lock in with other Big Ten programs now, right? Just based off of they're a bit of a needle mover and the Cignetti effect and all that. I wonder if they're going to keep this all the way out, or is it like, hey, you know, North Texas, whoever, here's the money, we're going to go play Alabama. I don't know.
I think for the next handful of years, they're pretty set. And he's not, this isn't anything that he hasn't had a hand in. Like, I think he's had a, the only one he didn't have a hand in is Louisville. Is canceling that one. That was done before he was there. And, but other
and
than that.
Of, were all of these signed off by him? Like, when he got there, were these done prior to Cignetti getting to Indiana?
I don't know every single one of them, but I know for a fact he had his hand in a lot of the future schedule. Because I think he believes in this philosophy. So it's weird that he would talk so tough about the SEC crying about their cannibalizing each other and then take the easy way out in the non-conference. But this is about racking up wins and making sure you win the right ones. And like you say, if it gets him in and gets him in the tournament, that's all that matters. But he's going to go his first 6 years in Bloomington without facing a single Power Four team outside of the Big Ten. It's just, I think you then you need to just probably shut up and win. Like at that point, honestly.
Which he's not going to do.
But I mean, they were originally set to play Virginia in a few years. That was a home and home. That got canceled. By the way, they had to buy him out. It's not like you just call up and say, hey.
That's what I'm saying. Like some of these
something
teams,
came up.
I brought that up. Could they do that with some of these teams down the road if they want to beef up their schedule?
I don't think they want to. I don't think this was an accident. I think outside of Louisville, this was not an accident. This was strategic.
All the people that was rooting on me to fail, you know, at the end of the day, they got to wake up tomorrow and have the same life that they had before they woke up today.
I didn't mean to click a repeat, so I'll click this one instead.
I don't really need your help, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to win $1 million.
I hope to be that confident one day. So the Golics apparently brought back their ESPN radio show, so senior and junior. And Bobby Burak, who works for Outkick, questions, is Mike Golic senior on the Mount Rushmore of sports radio? Mike Francesa, Jim Rome, and Colin Cowherd are the top three. Golic versus Mad Dog for the fourth spot, I'd say. Both are ahead of Dan Patrick. So aside from Francesa, Rome, Cowherd, who would be the fourth head on the Mount Rushmore?
You're looking at him. His name's Anthony Rothman.
And Fernie.
Okay, you guys
his
need to just
Anthony
stay
bleeping Rothman.
Stay on target.
What do you mean?
Stay within.
You're on that Mount Rushmore.
Right, we're offering the best possible stuff within this price range. Let's keep it where it is. So we had Mad Dog, Russo, Rome, Coward, and Golic. Is that what he said?
Francesa, not Mad Dog.
So I can't tell you whether I really listened to Mike and the Mad Dog on the Fan. I didn't. I'm sure it was iconic, and Russo's the one that kind of went into the stratosphere with a lot of stuff he did.
Oh, yeah. He's got his own kind of serious deal and everything.
But the fact that Rome has done this for so long with that style and is incredibly impressive. But, I mean, maybe you'd have to just throw Chris Russo and Mike Francesa in together, and that would take up two of the spots.
Yeah, I think I would lean more towards Golic just because that's what I consumed a lot of. Mm-hmm. Like, mad respect for the Mad Dog and what he's built, right? But I didn't consume a lot of New York radio growing up. I did consume a lot of Golic and Golic. So I'll give my vote to him.
I look over, there's a crank right in my face. Larry Brown.
There's Tell the Truth.
I told him about, I didn't have that story, but I told him about my Larry Brown story at Kansas.
We got to go. Before we leave, you miss anything from our show, wherever you get your podcast, just type in Rothman and Ice, everything we do from noon to three. We'll be waiting there for you. Common Man and Timmy coming up next. I'll take you to 6 o'clock. Don't move.
Outstanding to have you guys along to start the week. We're back tomorrow at noon. Rothman and